They get a modest pension, but it's...
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. James Gardler, Local 13,000 president, going to be here talking about the CWA strike against Verizon. There is, you know, some positive movement. I'm calling it a victory. The workers are going to go back to work tomorrow morning, back to the bargaining table. And this is one of those moments where you go, this is the reason that sometimes you have to strike. It's kind of like a jump start, kind of to get people motivated to get back to the table and begin negotiations. I'm saying this is a very good thing. So we'll see how that goes. We'll talk with James a little bit later in the program. Also, Robert Nayman's going to be here talking about the possibility of budget cuts, of cutting some of the military budget. And, you know, with all this talk of slash and burn, with all this talk of cut, gut, and punish, the military is a place we're going to have to look. Is it possible? And he's saying, you know, his piece, why the jobs argument against military cuts is bogus. So we'll talk about that in the second hour. And also in the second hour, we're going to talk with Mike O'Brien about his upcoming album. You know, it's good to see working class music popping up. And, you know, one of the things about during the whole, this last several years with going into Iraq and Afghanistan and all the war and all the conflict, you know, we haven't seen a lot of protest music. So it'll be good to talk to him about, his work. So like I said, a big win, I think, at Verizon. And I think, like I've been saying throughout the whole thing, this, I think, can be that moment in history where we go, you know what? We do have some power in numbers. We do have the ability to fight back. We do have the ability to stand up to the big multinational, the big special interest. We have that power in numbers. As long as we're not at each other and we know which direction we're fighting and who we're fighting against, we got a shot. And this Verizon situation to me is one of those moments where you go, yeah. They showed solidarity. They were all out on the picket line. They were all standing shoulder to shoulder. And look what happened. Back to the table, possibility of a very good contract. So I'm really, really excited about that because I think we'll start seeing more of this. More people standing up and saying, you know what, you're sitting on massive amounts of cash. You're sitting on huge profits. You're sitting on enormous breaks and tax loopholes. You're sitting on all of this. Why aren't you creating jobs? Why is the economy still in the toilet? Why are we still struggling to get a raise? Why are we still struggling to make ends meet when corporate profits are through the roof? CEOs are lining their pockets at record rates. I think now, you know, you're going to start seeing people. Now that you've got one under the belt, that's how you get number two. And I'm excited to see that. So good stuff there. Also, this weekend we were at the AFSCME conference down in Lancaster, and I wanted to throw a shout out to all the folks we got to see there. You know, these conferences, I think, are fantastic for pulling people together. And I think that's why AFSCME here in the state of Pennsylvania did as well as they did. They didn't do great, but they did better than most. It's because of the unity. It's because they were going to stick together. And out of it, they got treated reasonably. And that, from their perspective, is all they really wanted. So it was great to talk to those folks. We had a really good time, as we always do. Also on Saturday, we were out in Franklin County for the Democrats, Sunfest 2011. I got to be honest, I didn't know there were that many Democrats in Franklin County. But congratulations to them. Had a fantastic turnout. Went out to see a couple of bands play. Had the opportunity to talk to some folks out there. So we're excited about that because it shows that people are coming out. It shows that people are peeking their head out from behind the curtain going, things aren't right. How do we change it? How do we get involved? How do we stand up and say no more? And, that was kind of the theme in both the conference, the AFSCME conference, and the Democrat Sunfest there in Franklin County. The same thing. How do we turn this country around? Because I don't think anybody's thrilled with the direction. We've done everything the Republicans really wanted, tax cuts, deregulation, a whole bunch of handouts to corporations. To them, it's never enough. Everything is never enough. We want more. But folks are going, we've given all these companies all of this stuff. We've given the wealthy as much as they could possibly want. We've created a millionaire and billionaire class second to none globally. Why are the rest of us struggling? And we're going to talk about that a little bit later because Thomas Friedman had a really interesting piece. It's not the economy's fault. It's your fault. It's your fault for not having the right skills. It's your fault for not working hard enough. I always love that argument. It's not that the game's rigged against you. It's just you're not working hard enough. But good times there. I want to thank everyone, especially Sherry Morgan, who invited us out to the Franklin County Democratic Sunfest. Great time. Thank you so much. The Hershey thing has really caught on. And, again, it's another one of these examples. You had Verizon. You got Hershey. You got all of this attention. And it's this attention to workers getting screwed over. The Hershey thing has caught on nationally. People are now looking at what used to be the sweetest city on earth as right now the sweetest sweatshop on earth. And these kids have really brought attention to what's going on there. Especially, and I've been getting a bunch of emails from folks, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but I've been getting a bunch of emails from people going, yeah, I worked there in the last year, a couple of years ago. I worked there in the past. And it's always been one group or another. First it was, this minority group who, the city paid the bus in or the state paid the bus in, and now it's these folks. It's always an exploitable class. It's always somebody who wasn't going to stand up and fight back. And now they found somebody they couldn't pick on. All these kids said, hell no, I'm tired of this. I didn't come here to lift boxes all day long. I didn't come here to get all bruised up. I came here for a cultural experience. And the cultural experience they found was not necessarily the one they wanted, not the one that they had been told of, not the vision of this country that I think we want to portray to the rest of the world. What these kids walked away with is slave labor. And they could have got, most of them could have got that at home. They've got, where some of these folks come from, they've got petty dictators of their own they have to deal with. They don't want to have to come here and deal with our petty dictators who sit in the corporate boardroom. So I'm excited about that as well. There are just so many positive things popping up. So much opportunity to get involved. So many chances for the folks who have been kind of demoralized lately to stand up and say, we're going to fight back and we're going to win this thing. I look last week in Ohio. Kasich going, we need to talk. Why can't we talk? Oh, let's talk now. After trying to ram his agenda down the throats of all the people in the state that didn't agree with him. And if you remember, he was pretty upfront about it. Look, I'm going to jam this down your throat. I've got the votes. I'm going to do it. I don't want to talk to you. And now the table has turned. And they're trying a PR thing. They're trying to, let's talk. What could hurt by talking? Because, the stories I saw over the weekend, the Republicans are reaching out to angry Democrats. No, you're not. It's a fake olive branch. It's a rotten olive branch. This idea that somehow they're going to now, after they've done all of these things, be it Kasich in Ohio or Walker in Wisconsin, now they're going to reach out and say, hey, We're sorry. Let's talk. Come on, let's sit down. I know we beat you up, and I know we kicked in your teeth. Yeah, we know, but let's talk now. We can work something out. And fortunately, the people in Ohio, fortunately on one hand, fortunately the leaders of the We Are Ohio coalition said no. You know, repeal SB 5, and then we will sit down. Undo all of the things that you did to us, and then we'll sit down. On one hand, that's a good thing. It shows the membership solidarity, shows them power, shows them strength. On the other hand, from a PR message, well, you know how it's being spun. Well, now they don't want to talk. They're not much better. The Republicans, they learned their lesson. They learned. And now they're trying. And it's those Democrats who won't reach out, which is nonsense. If you remember this entire time, that's all the Democrats and all the union people were talking about. Let's come to some kind of a compromise. Let's talk about this. You don't have to go this extreme, but the radicals on the right, hell bent. And that's how far they went. Also in Michigan, there's a lawsuit being filed. Again, you've got another radical governor, another radical Wisconsin type, Republican there in, Rick Snyder. The governor of Michigan, who has put out PA 98, which is this anti-project labor agreement legislation, wants to ban the state from any awarding any public contracts to any group that uses or even encourages unionized labor. Nothing. Can't do it. And you're going to tell me there's not an assault on organized labor in this country? There's not an assault by the radical right? And here's the thing. I mean, if you look at the project labor agreements, they're there for a couple of main reasons. To guarantee that you have a local construction industry, that you have local hiring requirements, that you have to use people from your area. It has to have apprenticeship programs, and it has to get veterans involved. There's a whole bunch to this that is very positive. But the biggest part of it is that it provides a floor, and it provides really a very stable working environment. Everybody knows the rules. Everybody knows the game, and everybody does their job. And what's amazing to me is, you know, you look at the statistics. Projects that were done with PLAs come in under budget, under time, and are done with what I would say, you know, better quality because the people live there. You know, do I want, and I mean, stop and think about this. Do you want the school that your kid is going to sit in? Do you want that roof put up by someone who's just passing through? Or do you want it put up by someone whose kid's going to be sitting in that classroom? You know, I think I want someone who's going to be sitting in that classroom who has a commitment to the community, who has ties to the community and cares whether, oh, gee, they used cheap material or, gee, they didn't use as much as they should have. I got problems with that. This idea of a transient workforce bothers me, but that's what the folks in Michigan want, evidently, according to their governor. So there's going to be a lawsuit filed over this. And I'm hoping. That we see some movement and you see some pushback. And we are. We're seeing people standing up. We're seeing people saying, you know what? No more. We are going to fight this. And we're going to fight it the rest of the program. If you've got something on your mind, question, comment, give me a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Or you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. No community has been hit harder in the stalled economic recovery than that of African Americans. The national unemployment rate for that community is 16%, nearly twice as high as the overall national average. Some regions of the country are even seeing African American unemployment numbers creeping toward 50%. In Inglewood, California, for example, the rate is 35%. This weekend, three congresswomen from the region held an economic summit where more than 1,000 citizens turned out. Democrat Maxine Waters was one of the speakers, and she put some of the blame for the failure to get the economy moving on the inability of the Tea Party to negotiate.
You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
An LA jobs fair is being planned for the end of August. Two major unions are opposing the proposed Keystone XL oil pipeline project. Doug Cunningham reports.
The Amalgamated Transit Union and the Transport Workers Union are calling on the U.S. State Department to not approve the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline that would carry oil from the tar sands in Alberta, Canada, to Texas. The unions say they share the Environmental Protection Agency's concerns about potential pollution of groundwater for tens of millions of people. The tar sands project has already destroyed vast areas of boreal forest in Canada. Sean Sweeney is director of Cornell's Global Labor Institute.
There's an attitude in the leadership of those unions where the old ways of doing things, there's a recognition that that has not gotten us very far. And there's a growing awareness that climate change is serious enough that it warrants everybody's attention in the labor movement and across broader society. They have the kind of approach that replicated across the labor movement would be much better than it is at the moment. I would suggest that unions who support the project should withdraw their support.
Sweeney says the ATU and TWU are progressive unions that realize we need jobs and infrastructure investments that don't damage the environment.
45,000 Verizon workers are returning to work today. The Communications Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers announced this weekend that while a new contract agreement hasn't been reached, the company has indicated interest in negotiating seriously. Verizon had proposed a list of 100 concessions to be included in the new contract for employees in their landline division, but the two unions representing those employees said that long list of demands was unacceptable and the workers walked out. However, according to the New York Times, Verizon has indicated it hasn't taken any of those demands off the table.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Our stat of the night comes from the folks over at the Too Much Online blog. They ask, how equal do Americans want America to be? They said in blind testing, says Duke University's Dan Early, 93% of Democrats in the United States and 90.5% of Republicans pick Sweden's more equal wealth distribution over the more unequal distribution here in the U.S. And if you go to workerparticipation.eu, what you find, 90% of the Swedish workers are covered by a collective bargaining agreement. You want to talk about something that levels things out a little bit? The ability to bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions. That's why I've asked James Gardler, CWA Local 13,000 president, to come talk to us about what's going on with Verizon. James, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
I'm good, and I guess you guys are doing better. Tomorrow morning, your guys are going to go back to work.
Yeah, tomorrow morning. We had some crews going back in this evening. What we had worked out with the company is that by 5 o'clock, or we had anybody that was working a shift starting at 5 o'clock today, they would go back to work.
So I guess
we just didn't want them in there working with the replacement workers that they had brought in, and we were giving them the opportunity to get those people out of our work locations.
Yeah, well, because most of them looked unsafe from the videos I saw. So,
right.
At this, you could probably, this is successful, mission accomplished, I would say, because you've jump-started the bargaining process, and both sides are now where they should be, back at the bargaining table.
Right, exactly. And you know what, and clearly, I mean, you look at what was going on, there were a lot of problems that they weren't going to be able to handle. I mean, the workforce they were bringing in clearly wasn't capable of handling the work that was in there. And, you know, our people getting back here, we'll get all these customers back in service as efficiently as possible, and we'll concentrate on getting this bargain process moving along better.
Yeah, now, I understand you guys have lifted any restrictions on overtime for this week to help try and, to, you know, and this is a good thing, I guess, to help try and get service back up, since it's been only 2 weeks that your guys haven't been there and things have gotten really backed up. And I guess that's a testament to the skill and professionalism of your members.
Absolutely. I mean, our workers are definitely the best trained workers out there in the industry, and they need to have them there doing this work. I mean, these customers, they have some of them sitting out for weeks at a time. I mean, that's just unacceptable.
Absolutely.
And we told them this going into the bargaining process. We're saying, you know, you're ruining your name. You're jeopardizing your name. And by pushing us to go out on strike really is what created all these problems.
You know, some people would ask, why did you go on strike? Because as I remember it, and help me if I'm wrong here, but they didn't show up to the entire weekend to the deadline, and it kind of just forced you into it.
Right. I mean, like I said earlier, there were concessionary demands all throughout the comprehensive proposal the company had given us. And we told them, listen, we're not going to be able to accept any of these things that you have, you know, that you're asking us to concede on. And nothing ever changed through that process, even up until the 11th hour. I mean, the company was still coming to us with proposals that would have increased their ability to use contractors, taking work right from our bargaining unit, and then also shipping work out of the country. And that was just not acceptable. I mean, there was no way we could consider it.
You know, and one of the things I've been saying through this whole process, and even the months prior to this, is we're seeing so many companies taking back wages, taking back benefits. We're seeing so many conditions being degraded. And I point to the J.P. Morgan Chase analyst who said, you know, that these big S&P 500 companies, these big companies are more profitable than they've been since the mid-60s. And he concluded the reason was because they were able to steal back wages and benefits, and it would go to the bottom line, to the profits. What I've been saying is in the unionized companies, you know, like Verizon, where they have CWA and the IBW, you know, watching over their pocketbook, it's not happening as much.
No. And you know what? We've gone out and we try to negotiate good contracts for our workers. And I mean, we're not willing to give these things up. You know what I mean? We fought for them. I mean, you have a lot of people out there that say, well, it's time the union starts paying into this. And, you know, I say back to those people, you should fight for the things that you want. Or that you're being asked to, you know, to have taken from you. Because that's really what it comes down to, is they want to take things from you. And, you know, we're fighting that fight right now for our members. And we want to make sure that we preserve the things that we've gotten for them in previous collective bargaining agreements. And also get improvements from a company that made $6 billion last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point. And, you know, the reality is we're hearing that message being drumbeat to us. Well, we need to sacrifice. Times are tough. Yet, as you've pointed out, the company, Verizon, very, very profitable. Their CEO filling his pockets. In fact, the one guy I saw, he's got health care from now until the day he dies, even if he leaves Verizon. And so does his wife. I don't know any of your members who have that.
They have health care for our retirees. Our retired members have health care. And we bargained for health care for all of our retirees. In fact, in our last round of bargaining, that became a mandatory subject of bargaining. I mean, clearly, they're the people that helped build what we have today. So we want to make sure we're taking care of our retirees as well as our active members as well.
And that's, you know, that is to me the reason that one of the main reasons you collectively bargain. And, you know, and I look in other countries, and you know, like I pointed out at the beginning, 90% of the workers in Sweden are covered under a collective bargaining agreement, and you have a more equal distribution of wealth. You have a larger, more prosperous middle class in a place like Sweden than we have here. And my argument is, you know, maybe there's something to that.
And I mean, look at what's going on across this country now, Rick. I mean, collectively, there's an attack on the public sector right now, you know, and people say, well, once they do the public sector, they're going to come after the private sector. And I say to our members, they've already come after the private sector.
Absolutely.
They've already had an attack on the private sector. Now they're finally going back and they're focusing more on the public sector and trying to destroy those good paying jobs that these people have.
Yeah, and you know,
they've come after the private sector.
Oh, yeah, and the reality is I think the people who are most vehemently opposed to the public sector workers are folks who were told, you know, like the Tea Party people, who at the beginning I could have been one. I'm angry my 401k they promised was going to be $1 million isn't. And they promised if I worked hard I would be, you know, successful and all of that. Not working out so well. I understand why people are angry. Because we've got trade policies that allow those good-paying middle-class jobs to leave this country, and now you're looking at somebody who's working for $8-$10 an hour, going, you know, why do they have it and I don't?
Right, and even, I mean, look at college kids coming out today, looking for jobs. You know, what do they want them to do? I mean, we were saying earlier we had a rally on Friday down in Philadelphia, and we had probably 2,000 people show up down there, and I said to these people, they would much prefer middle-class America to be minimum wage America.
Yep. Not middle class, desperation class.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unbelievable. And I mean, looking at what took place, and I think one of the things that helped get us back to work, the news was reporting different things, and that there were a few people down there covering our event on Friday, and they came right out and said, we're 13 days into the strike, and our members were showing no signs of backing down. I mean, 12-hour, 14-hour days out on the picket line, day after day after day. Our members knew what was at stake, and they weren't willing just to concede anything. And I think the company finally identified with that.
Well, that, and they started seeing their infrastructure crumble before their eyes.
Right, right. And I mean, you know, we had people out there at the wireless locations, and I think they were feeling the hit there, too. You know what I mean? Our people were out picketing at the wireless, Verizon wireless locations, and I think that had a big impact on them.
See, because I think right now is an excellent opportunity for unions like CWA, all of the unions, to get out and begin to tell their story more loudly, if you will, with more passion, saying, look, the reason that the middle class, the working class in this country is struggling is because they don't have a voice in what happens to them where they spend more than a third of their lives.
Right. That's true. I mean, I agree with you 100%. They're not giving people the opportunity to speak up for themselves, and I think, you know, we took a stand, and I think everybody was watching. I think all across the country, people were paying close attention to what was taking place with our strike that we had going on with Verizon. And I think, you know, right now, it's, you know, the biggest hurdle is going to be getting back down and getting these other issues resolved and making sure that the company lives up to what they said they would do, which is come back with a new bargaining strategy so we can make some progress and get a new agreement for our workers.
So there's really no agreement yet, because early on there was some rumors that a tentative agreement had been reached. This is just an agreement to come back to the table.
Right, right. And what we said all along is that, you know, we were willing to talk, but we have to start getting some of these concessionary items off the table. And, you know, I think the company finally realizes that, and that's why we decided to have our people come back to work. And, you know, these other things that are out there may take some time to get this, to reach a successful agreement, but I think going back to work now at this time and seeing that they come in with this new style of bargaining with us, if that's effective, then we'll get a successful agreement done.
Yeah, I think it was a good idea to go back. I mean, someone would say that, you know, that you're, you know, while the company is struggling, while their infrastructure is crumbling before their eyes, you kind of had them where you would have wanted them. But I don't think you want the company to crumble before your eyes.
No. I mean, you know, and you've seen some of the newspaper articles they put out there. They said that, you know, they wanted to destroy 50 years of bargaining. Well, not only were they trying to destroy 50 years of bargaining, I think they were destroying 50 years of growth. I mean, you know, when I started out working for this company, it was Bell PA and Bell Atlantic. Now it's Verizon. And look at the growth that's transpired. I'll be there 20 years this year. That's 20 years. And, you know, this company has done nothing but grow. And if they're going to put that on the line and risk that, you know, they want to take 50 years of bargaining, they're going to destroy 50 years of a name of company.
Yeah,
and that's what I think they realized as well.
You hope anyway, because, you know, you look at this and you know, you look at all the money that they spent on this. I heard they were hiring people for upwards of $75 an hour. I don't know if it's true, but it's what I heard.
I'm glad I hear the same rumors that you're talking about. Yeah, and I mean, and then they were spending $90,000 just on one paper per day for one page. They spent over $1 million just in advertising in Philadelphia.
So the question,
I mean, that's crazy.
So the question then becomes, if they're willing to shell out this kind of cash, why aren't they willing to shell that out to keep what appears from the outside an extremely qualified, extremely professional workforce?
Right, exactly. And I guess, you know, the easy way to put it, that's the $6 billion question. Yeah. Why would they be willing to spend all that money when they could have actually negotiated with us in good faith to try to reach a successful agreement?
Well, my thought is that they're seeing all of their corporate buddies, all of the other petty dictators in the CEO or boardrooms going, hey, we're stealing back from our workers. You know, times are tough. It's time to, you know, to reach into their bag and steal some of it back, and that you guys would crumble.
And I think that's a credit to our members understanding that this company is highly profitable and they know what's going on. And they realized that what this company was trying to do or what they were bringing to the table just wasn't right.
And it's a credit.
That's why our people were so passionate and motivated during this work stoppage. was because they were educated and they knew everything that was going
on. And the education part, you got to credit to the leadership, to you and to the folks at CWA and IBEW for keeping their members in informed and up to date. And, you know, that's part of what you're supposed to be doing.
Well, and I think everything our members did, the CWA members and the IBEW members, was tremendous. Go to war with these guys any day. I mean, that's how passionate and motivated they were during this whole time frame.
Well, James Gardler, I hope you'll come back as this process moves down the road. Hopefully something very soon comes in the way of a contract, and I hope that it's acceptable and agreeable to both sides. Great talking to you. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Ulrich. I appreciate it.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. Your calls after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
Come on, Obama. Do it. Stand up. Stand tall. Stand firm. Yes, you can. The president is thinking about issuing an executive order that would mitigate some of the damage done to our democracy by the Supreme Court's dastardly Citizens United edict, which unleashes unlimited amounts of secret corporate cash to pervert America's elections. Obama's idea is simply to require that those corporations trying to get federal contracts disclose all of their campaign donations for the previous 2 years, including money they launder through such front groups as the National Chamber of Commerce. This approach says to those giants sucking up billions of our tax dollars for endless war, privatization of public services, etc., you're still free to shove trainloads of your shareholders' money into congressional and presidential races, but hey, just tell the public how much you're giving and to whom. Neat. It would be a clean, direct, and effective reform. So, of course, the corporate powers and their apologists are squealing like stuck pigs. Stephen Law, a Bush-Cheney operative who is now both a Wall Street Journal editorialist and the head of a secret corporate money fund, recently decried the very idea of public disclosure of contractor campaign contributions. When I was in the executive branch, he sniffed, mixing politics with procurement was called corruption. Yes, Steve, and y'all were corruption experts. Perhaps you've forgotten that we remember Halliburton, the Cheney-run corporation that helped put Bush in office and then was handed tens of billions in contracts, becoming the poster child of corrupt, no-bid procurement. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Obama, you can do it. Don't back down from these corporate sleazes. Sign that disclosure order. After all, if they're going to steal our elections, at least we should make them admit it to us.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
If it's class warfare, my class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. And Buffett last week, you'll remember, he wrote a piece in the New York Times, an op-ed there, where he said, you know, we got to get serious about shared sacrifice. You know, while our poor and our middle class are fighting in Afghanistan and while most Americans struggle to make ends meet, he said, we, the mega rich, continue to get extraordinary tax breaks. So he's like, you know, you got to tax us more. Stop coddling the rich. You got to stop coddling the very wealthy and tax us. Look, we've had it too good for too long. We're the key to turning this country around. You created us. You created this monster of a billionaire class. Now it's time for us to help back. And, you know, I've been saying that, you know, pretty much every day since I've been on the air, that we need a more progressive tax code, that the wider your shoulders, the more water you got to carry. The mightier you are, the more we expect of you. The more that's been given to you, the more we'd like you to help chip in a little bit. Well, the others in the billionaire class, not so happy. In fact, one of the Koch brothers, he came out and, you know, not too happy. Now understand, the Koch brothers spend an awful lot of that money that we give them in tax breaks, pushing this idea of, this whole libertarian, extreme conservative view of the free market and, the wonders of the invisible hand. And, you know, I'll tell you, I've been getting the invisible fist for some time because of the invisible hand. But the reality is here, he came out and he said, look, you know, quote, much of what government spends money on does more harm than good. You know, like those food stamp programs, you know, that help feed children, much more harm than good. Like the Republican in South Carolina said, you know, like my grandmammy said, you feed those animals, they'll just reproduce. So, again, we understand the Republican mentality here. He goes on to say this is particularly true over the past several years. A good shot to Obama. He says, with the massive, uncontrolled increase in government spending, he says, I believe my business and nonprofit investments are much more beneficial to societal well-being than sending more money to Washington. I tend to disagree with you there, Chuck. But, you know, the reality is some of the jobs he creates do help people. They do. But understand, the wealth that they create, he benefits from. He didn't become a billionaire by out there digging by himself. He became a billionaire because he was able to benefit off of other people's labor. And there's nothing wrong with that, but there's a point at which, as a society, you go, do I really want the Koch brothers having this kind of wealth to where they can swing elections however they want because now they're people. These big corporations, these big special interests are now somehow people with thanks to Citizens United with First Amendment rights. Well, soon, I guess, Fifth Amendment rights, if they're actually people. So I look at this and I go, we've got to have some debating here. And I'm hoping that people look at Buffett's statement and say, you know what? He's right. Not Coke, but Buffett. So it's going to be interesting over the next couple of weeks to see how this whole thing works itself out as the billionaires begin to brawl. I got my money on Buffett. Anyway, I got an email this week directing me to a podcast of a guy named John Elliott, who I've had on the program a couple of times in the past. He was talking about Walmart. You want to talk about billionaire class? And I'll bet you the four of them are on the side of the Coke head. But he was talking, Elliot was talking about Walmart's profit, which are down. And he claimed that they were down for one reason, the more obvious reason, being that customers are flat broke. We've seen the jobs disappear. We've seen wages shrink. The Verizon situation is not the norm in this country. What happens is the petty dictator in the CEO boardroom says 10% across the board cuts. And guess what happens? 10% across the board cuts. You don't have any say because you don't have the leverage that fortunately the folks at Verizon, the 45,000 people there, do. So customers are broke. There's nobody to go to the stores and spend a whole bunch of money. Or two, as John Elliott says, every time you shop at Walmart, God kills a kitten. The listener thought that was interesting, and I don't know that God kills kittens, but I do believe Elliot's premise that we're broke, man. The working people of this country are broke because we've been too busy worshiping at the altar of greed. We've been too busy worshiping at the altar of the billionaire, saying, oh, please create jobs for us so we can continue to buy the cheap plastic crap made in China at our Walmart stores. And look, their sales have, for the past 2 years, gone down. And what I'm saying happened, this is the end of the Walmart model. They have squeezed every dime. They have squeezed every bit of redundancy. They have squeezed every supply line. They have sought out every last drop of cheap labor, exploitable environment, a polluted environment. They've done all that. Prices are now low. Only problem is there are nobody with money. So we're now at the end of the road, the end of the Walmart thing. Because now we live in this global environment where, you know what? Walmart can't do this anymore. You can exploit labor, you can exploit the environment, but if this country cannot be the consumer of last resort, you can't exist. And that's where we're heading. We're heading down this road. I mean, you know, I had someone ask me the other day, how much of what Walmart sells in their stores is American-made? And I didn't have an answer. My guess would be maybe 5% American-made products in there, maybe. And he said it was about 90% stuff made in China. I don't know where he got the number, but here again, you look at this and you go, if that's the case, how is this good for the country? How is it good for you and me to have access to what they claim are low prices, even though we're seeing that they're really not? How's that good for us if you don't have a job? And I read this piece by Thomas Friedman this weekend. It was titled A Theory of Everything, Sort of, Finding What's Common in a Discontented World Across the World. And, he talks about, all of the strife going on around the world and how he's saying it's because we're now so hyper-connected. You've got the Internet, you've got Facebook, you've got Skype, people got cell phones and smartphones that give them Internet connectivity. They have all this stuff. We're now hyper-connected. And, this anger, this angst, this frustration can now be global. You can be angry everywhere. And now they're figuring out how to bring people together and say, no more. This idea that somehow a good future is out of your grasp is ticking people off. And he writes, something that, kind of, again, it's the very right-wing argument. He says this is the single most important trend in the world today, this hyperconnectivity. He says it is a critical reason why to get to the middle class now you have to study harder, work smarter, and adapt quicker than ever before. All this technology and globalization are eliminating the work that once sustained lots of middle class lives. So he's basically telling you if you're not, you got to work harder than everybody else and you've got to be smarter than everybody else. That whole right wing frame, the whole Horatio Alger, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, boy. Without telling you that it's a rigged game from the beginning. This whole globalization set is a rigged game from the start. And that cheap labor is what is destroying this whole thing. But he keeps right on to it. He says, look, the merger of globalization and IT is driving huge productivity gains. And he's saying, look, we don't need anymore to go, hire American smart workers. We can get talented, college-educated people all over the globe. We don't need to be here in the U.S. And in fact, he talks about the Chinese who are sending, thousands of students here to the U.S. to go to our colleges. Again, it's this whole system of him saying, well, you got to work harder. Not that the game's rigged against you, but you just got to work harder. And he goes through this whole litany of where the end result is. If you're not working hard enough, you can't possibly exist. And I kind of don't agree. I think you have to have trade policies that encourage hard work. You have to have trade policies that reward people in each country. Not this race to the bottom, who's willing to slit each other's throats for the least amount. At some point, that is the pretty much the death of all of our cultures. And maybe it takes a collapse. But I hate to see that. And as we're continually put into competition with the Chinese, as we're continually matched up against the Chinese, who, understand, are going to work for 50 cents an hour, you cannot compete with that. And some say, oh, well, we can compete. No, you can't compete. So to have direct trade policies with them and then have Biden go out there and say, oh, you and me, China, we're the future of this world, scares me. And it angers me and it frustrates me because it gives them total legitimacy. It's not that they beat us. It's that we've given them this. And when we come back, I want to talk about all the corporations who have decided that, we're going to move jobs out of the country, but not going to let anybody know. And you know where they're going? We all know where they're going. China, India, all gone. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. 2561.
There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today.
Wow. If truer words were ever spoken, I mean, you look at how this whole thing has transpired over the last 40 years. And again, you know, what worries me, I had a conversation with a girl, the waitress, we had dinner tonight, and, you know, we're talking about, you know, the direction of the country and how you're seeing this corporate control of our government. And, you know, I said, you know, we're moving towards a fascist type government. And her eyes got real big because she understood that word. Wasn't really politically engaged, wasn't active, not something that she was, thinking of. But as soon as you said that word, grabbed her attention. Really? Because her father was from Italy. And that sparked something. I don't know if she got it, but she knew that was something that her father knew about. And I tell you, when we see corporations ruling the roost, and I look at the fact that Jeffrey Immelt is the job czar. You know, the president put this guy as the job czar. It's kind of got to make you go, what the hell's going on? This guy is the big outsourcer. So when you see this Washington Post article today that says some of the country's best-known multinational corporations, they're closely guarding the number of people that they're throwing out of jobs, and the people that they have hired abroad, are you surprised? In fact, the Post says, it's so secretive that when they hand the figures over to the government, it's on the condition that the government will only release the aggregate number. They won't release the breakdown. So we don't get to know where the multinationals cut 2.9 million jobs and then added 2.4 million jobs in the last 10 years. We don't get to know that. We don't know what, where, when. We don't get to know any of that stuff. And again, this is what happens when you have corporations who have so much power, so much influence. And look, this president started off trying, and I truly believe he started off trying. And the business roundtable got him into the room. And they said, look, you want to be successful? You do what we say, or we're going to collapse this thing. And you look at the jobs breakdown. You know, companies like Apple and Pfizer, they don't. They don't break it down. Yet they're asking for money so they can create jobs. So where are they getting these jobs? Where are they creating them? I've been arguing for the longest time, and I think correctly, that when we give these big multinational money, these big multinationals money, they use it to create jobs in China. They use it to create jobs in India, in Brazil, everywhere but here. When we give these billionaires all this money, you're right, they create jobs, just not here. And this BS that, well, you know, it's too much regulation. We need more deregulation. We need more tax cuts. Ain't working, man. Because you're never going to deregulate enough for these people. You're never going to give them enough tax cuts. It's never enough. You look at GE. Not only did they pay no taxes, we actually gave them more incentives. Here's more money. Please, create a job. And now we find out, what are they doing? They're moving their 115-year-old X-ray division from Waukesha, Wisconsin to Beijing. Hey, Scott Walker, congratulations. Creating jobs over there. I guess this is them paying their own guy back. So 115-year-old company, zip, over to China. GE is set to invest $2 billion in China. Gee, I wonder, where do you think that money is coming from? Do you think it's coming from you and me? Because I sure as hell do. They're also going to train some 65 engineers, and they're going to create 6 research centers. I'm sorry. I thought this was the country of innovation. I thought this was the country where we wanted to invest more in R&D. But evidently, we've given them enough tax credits. Well, it's going to be beneficial over there. And, of course, the Chinese, I'm sure, will kick in a bunch. Now, this is a company, GE, who here in the U.S. last year made $5.1 billion. Like I said, paid no taxes. In fact, got money from us to boot. Who's the idiot here? And what's interesting is the American company, the American GE, actually employs more people overseas than they do here. So you go, the American company, GE, innovation, we bring good things to light, all that nonsense. Now, where are they doing that? In 2010, they had about 46% of their workforce here in the U.S., compared to 2000, where it was 54%. So we're seeing that downward slide. We're seeing those jobs going overseas. And it's not just them. It's all of them. IBM is rapidly, rapidly moving their workforce to India. Why? Big money. They're able to bring their product back here without any fear of regulation or tariff. So again, I keep asking, you know, what's this free trade thing? Is this working for us? Because I got to be honest, I think free trade is a scam. From the beginning, it's been a scam. It's been all about redistributing wealth from you to and me to them. Every one of these trade deals, and our president's pushing 3 more, every one of these trade deals is about opening up their markets to our financiers, to our wealth class, so that they can make more money off the working people in those countries, and then they can pit us against each other. So that we're at each other's throat, we're fighting, oh, we're competing, it's competition, competition's good. But the game's rigged, man. And, you know, I look at this, and I say, why are we offering more incentives? Why are we giving them handouts? Why aren't we saying, you know what, we'll give you handouts, but you prove where those jobs are. But you look at this report, oh, gee, we can't do that. Oh, geez. We're not, you know, we don't want to upset anyone. And you look at, these are the biggest of the biggest. These are the big multinational, the companies that are identified as American companies. And it's all about the stock price as well, especially for these little petty dictators like IML. Do you want to see his stock portfolio? I'm sure cha-ching. I'm sure there's money going into his pocket. And I got to be honest, to make that guy the job czar or the chief outsourcer kind of makes me wonder about Obama even more. And in fact, I've been bashing him for since the day he appointed Imelt. But again, I go back to, how bad is it? How bad is the control that corporations have over this country that the president would take this guy and make him the head guy, would take a Wall Street guy and make him his chief of staff? I mean, is it that bad? Have they got that much control? Are we that far gone? I sure hope not. Because as I'm looking at this thing, it's scary, scary stuff. And you look at the numbers that just came out and with this whole Bank of America thing, which has got me just flipped again. This whole Bank of America, this whole Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, the whole lot of them. And, you know, it turns out, you know, you look at this whole TARP thing, we're screwed again. And had we done what I wanted to from the very beginning, had we done from the start what I said we should have done, we'd be in much better shape. Because now we're finding out what went on with TARP, and now we're finding out with all the money we handed over to the big banksters. We're talking history. This is a historic bank robbery. This is the heist of the century. This is the ripoff of all ripoffs. We basically handed them $1.2 trillion in free money. And we did it on the QT. Did it on the down and low. Here you go. Don't tell anybody. So basically interest-free money to Morgan Stanley, Citigroup, Bank of America, and about 27 others, European banks as well. So we handed out all this money, $1.2 trillion. And I asked the question when I was reading through this, you know, how many homes could we have refinanced with $1.2 trillion? How many people could we have saved? How many families could have stayed in their homes? How many families could we have kept together? How many stories like that guy we talked to not too long ago whose son came home from Iraq the day they foreclosed on his house? How many of those stories could we have solved? And if you remember from the start, I said, make the people at the bottom whole. And once you do that, once you solve the problem at the bottom, you help the working folks who got screwed in all this, it will work its way up. And it'll fill the coffers at the top, and it'll make the people whole at the bottom. But that's what this was never about. This was never about solving the problem. This was about filling the banksters' pockets even more. This was about stealing more from the working people of this country. And as I've said, you know, you think about it. Think about the whole game. And a lot of the people that I've talked to who've been foreclosed on, it was about 5 years that they owned the house before they got foreclosed on. What happens in those first 5 years? You pay all your interest. They hammer you to death with interest. So you paid all this interest back for 5 years. You had no equity in the house, nothing. Because you didn't have to have any money down to buy it. So you put all this money and interest in it, and then they took the house back and kicked you to the curb, and now the next sucker will come, and he'll do it for 5 years. This was a huge ripoff. This was a major heist. And yet, screwed again, because we had to bail out the banksters. We should have done what I said we should have done right from the beginning, broken them up. Broke them up into small, manageable banks where, you know what, if one fails, hey, one fails. Because I wanted them to go down. I wanted to let them sink. Could it have been any less costly? I don't know. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. No community has been hit harder in the stalled economic recovery than that of African Americans. The national unemployment rate for that community is 16%, nearly twice as high as the overall national average. Some regions of the country are even seeing African-American unemployment numbers creeping toward 50%. In Inglewood, California, for example, the rate is 35%. This weekend, three congresswomen from the region held an economic summit where more than 1,000 citizens turned out. Democrat Maxine Waters was one of the speakers, and she put some of the blame for the failure to get the economy moving on the inability of the Tea Party to negotiate.
You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
An L.A. jobs fair is being planned for the end of August. Two major unions are opposing the proposed Keystone XL oil pipeline project. Doug Cunningham reports.
The Amalgamated Transit Union and the Transport Workers Union are calling on the U.S. State Department to not approve the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline that would carry oil from the tar sands in Alberta, Canada, to Texas. The unions say they share the Environmental Protection Agency's concerns about potential pollution of groundwater for tens of millions of people. The tar sands project has already destroyed vast areas of boreal forest in Canada. Sean Sweeney is director of Cornell's Global Labor Institute.
There's an attitude in the leadership of those unions where the old ways of doing things, there's a recognition that that has not gotten us very far. And there's a growing awareness that climate change is serious enough that it warrants everybody's attention in the labor movement and across border society. They have the kind of approach that replicated across the labor movement would be much better than it is at the moment. I would suggest that unions who support the project should withdraw their support.
Sweeney says the ATU and TWU are progressive unions that realize we need jobs and infrastructure investments that don't damage the environment.
45,000 Verizon workers are returning to work today. The Communications Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers announced this weekend that while a new contract agreement hasn't been reached, the company has indicated interest in negotiating seriously. Verizon had proposed a list of 100 concessions to be included in the new contract for employees in their landline division, but the two unions representing those employees said that long list of demands was unacceptable and the workers walked out. However, according to the New York Times, Verizon has indicated it hasn't taken any of those demands off the table.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Our quote of the day is from the 1953 speech given by President Dwight David Eisenhower to the American Society of Newspaper Editors, where he said, "Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and not clothed." He said, "This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, and the hopes of its children." This is not a way of life at all in any true sense. And, you know, you look now what's going on. You got this super committee. They're being convened to pursue the cut, gut, and punish policy. And they claim everything's on the table. And I'm saying, like any buffet, you walk up to the trough there. There are certain foods that get devoured and certain foods that, well, left untouched. Congratulations, you and me and the rest of the 98% of the country. I think we're about to be devoured. Because the reason we're not at the table is we're on the menu. But this military cuts thing, an interesting idea. And that's why I've asked Robert Naiman from truthout.org, where he's written a piece, "Is spending on military a good investment, economically?" And why the jobs argument against military cuts is bogus. Robert, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, it's great to be with you.
Are military cuts possible in this environment?
They're certainly possible. I would even say they're likely. I think the question is going to be, what's the scale of the military cut compared to other things that the super committee is going to propose? The trigger, if the super committee doesn't come to an agreement, of $1.2 trillion in cuts over 10 years are supposed to be automatically triggered, of which half of that is supposed to come from the military. So military cuts are on the table because they're in the trigger, and also because people, you know, this, the super committee can do whatever they want. Obviously, military cuts are on the mix, and everybody knows. is on fire. The checkbooks are open, and they're going to do everything they can to get to the super committee. But the thing is, and of course, these are people, you know, the military industry, these are people with deep pockets.
Sure they are.
Thanks to our tax dollars.
Yeah, I like what you wrote in your piece.
They're going to, you know, they're going to turn every stone. But the thing is that these people on the committee, while, you know, I mean, people like Patty Murray, people say, oh, well, she's the senator from Boeing. But on the other hand, you know, Patty Murray is also in the center of the Democratic Party, which has committed itself, most of the Democrats in Congress, not necessarily the president, but most of the Democrats in Congress have opposed any cuts to Social Security benefits or Medicare benefits, such as raising the Medicare retirement age. So they're in this new situation. You know, in the past, when members of Congress considered military spending, they were considering it in isolation. You know, the wars, Bush wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, these were off the regular books, you know, emergency supplemental funding. There wasn't a trade-off between, no, there was never a tax increase to pay for these wars.
Right.
Nobody ever said, oh, well, we're going to increase the spending on wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're going to cut the spending on something else. It was off the book. Now, for the first time in a decade, everything is on the same table. Every dollar they don't cut from the military budget in this super committee is a dollar they're going to have to take out of the U.S. economy in some other way, either through domestic cuts or through revenue increases. So the reason, the main reason that the jobs argument against military cuts, which they're already, of course, starting to make, these military companies, oh, you can't cut the spending because that will cost jobs. The main reason that's bogus is because this isn't happening in a vacuum. Every dollar they don't cut from the military is something that they're going to cut from the economy in some other way, including through domestic spending. And when people have looked at this in the past, in 2007, Bob Pollan did a study when he was talking about economic stimulus, saying, well, suppose you have $1 billion, and you could spend it on military spending, or you could spend it on stimulative tax cuts, like right now we have the payroll tax holiday. That's a stimulative tax cut, you know, gives the money to working people who are likely to spend it. Or you could spend money on mass transit, or you could spend money on education, spend money on health care. What creates the most jobs? The military spending creates the least jobs compared to all those other things, including the tax cuts. But, of course, the infrastructure spending creates more jobs. So that means that if you're talking about cuts, exactly the same story, just change the sign. If you cut military spending, that's going to reduce, because that employs fewer people,
right?
Particularly employs fewer people in the United States, which is the key thing, right?
Yeah, because it seems like
we're stimulating the economy of Germany, where, you know, you have a bunch of U.S. troops. So in terms of stimulating the economy of the United States, military spending is the least efficient way to do it. And right now, we're facing real trade-offs, one-to-one. Every dollar that's not cut from the military budget, it's going to be cut from the economy some other way. So military spending in this context actually destroys jobs relative to the other uses of the money.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, you said a second ago, every dollar they're going to take out of the economy. And when I hear that, is that the best thing to be doing right now when we're just, and I'm not saying we've recovered from this recession. I know a lot of people who still think we're in the middle of a depression. Is taking money out of the economy now a smart thing to do, be it military, be it social programs, be it infrastructure, whatever?
No, it's not a smart thing to do. And the people who say, you know, what the heck are we doing talking about deficit when we have 9% measured unemployment and the real, if you count, you know, people part-time that want to work full-time, people who are discouraged, probably more like 16%. And among some populations, like, you know, high school education, youth, African-Americans, unemployment rate is much higher than 9%. So some people, like Paul Krugman, is saying, what the heck are you talking about? The long-term deficit in the United States, we have 9% unemployment. That's totally correct. That is 100% correct. The deficit we should be talking about is the jobs deficit.
Absolutely.
However, that's not where we are right now in terms of Washington. In terms of Washington, what they're talking about is the long-term deficit. And they are talking about it over 10 years. They're not talking about, you know, at least in theory, they're not talking about, well, we have a deficit, so we need to make all these cuts right now. And they're talking about, you know, we need to make a plan for 10 years to reduce the deficit. Well, hopefully 10 years from now, 9 years from now, 7 years from now, the U.S. economy wouldn't be in recession. So it wouldn't it's not necessarily harmful to talk about a long-term reduction in the debt, particularly given that some of the long-term thing is that healthcare costs in the United States are out of control in the private sector, and that comes into the government budget. That's that's Medicare, because even though Medicare is relatively efficient, it still absorbs the costs from the private sector. So there is a long-term debt issue. It's not something that needs to be dealt with this year, but it's long-term. There isn't anything wrong with talking about, you know, a long-term problem and having a long-term plan to deal with that, but it's not the immediate crisis. The immediate crisis is the fact that you have, you know, 10% of the workforce unemployed. Incidentally, there's nothing that stops the government or the super committee from having a 10-year plan that has short-term stimulus up front. In fact, President Obama, both in the past and now, has been saying, hey, as part of this package, let's have a short-term stimulus.
Well, you're going to need it.
Let's extend unemployment benefits. Let's extend the payroll tax cut. So there's nothing necessarily contradictory about having a long-term plan to reduce the deficit and have a short-term plan to actually increase it, because that's the only way that in order for the government to address the unemployment situation, you have to increase the government deficit. That's the basic insight of Keynesian economics. And I explained this in my piece. If you have the idea that the government should put some people to work, let's say building infrastructure, you know, repairing our roads and bridges, well, it takes away the good if you immediately raise taxes to pay for it, because then you're taking out the same money that you're putting in. The whole point is that the government is supposed to put new money into
the jumpstart
into the economy,
so that you're jumpstarting the economy and getting this thing rolling again. Because what's going on is we have too few people with enough money to stimulate demand, and demand is what creates jobs. I don't care what the Republicans say. It's not tax handouts to the very wealthy. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Robert Nayman. He's written a great piece, Why the Jobs Argument Against Military Cuts is Bogus. You can find that on our site at therickssmithshow.com. Also, truthout.org, one of our great friends. You know, and looking at this, and, you know, I'm looking down the road, and you're saying it's possible, you're saying it's probable. I see the anniversary of 9/11 coming up. I see the possibility of maybe another boogeyman. There's somebody we got to basically scaring the hell out of people. I know we don't have the red, yellow, orange, color-coded terror things, but something to scare people into going, oh, we can't cut the guns right now. We'll give up the butter.
Well, for sure. That's going to happen. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily going to be like one big bogeyman. They're going to, you know, the Lockheed Martin and these companies that have profited so much, you know, in nominal terms, U.S. military spending doubled since 2001. These guys have had a field day. Of course, they're not just going to roll over and play dead. And so definitely you can expect in the next 3 months between now and Thanksgiving, when the super committee has to make its report, you're going to hear a lot about China, you're going to hear a lot about Iran, you're going to hear a lot about North Korea, and you're going to hear a lot about terrorism. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to work. And they're going to try, but that doesn't mean that they're going to succeed. And one of the dynamics is, you know, the world has kind of changed in the last year. You know, say whatever, you know, whether you like the party or don't like them, they changed the terrain by sticking to their principles. Now, you might not like their principles, but you know, one of their principles is that they're really against any revenue increase for the government. But what's interesting about that is that they're more opposed to revenue increases for the government than they are supportive of military spending. So the fact, if you look and see, you know, what they agreed so far in the first round, they didn't agree to any revenue increases, but they did agree to military cuts. And if you look at the trigger has military cuts, but it doesn't have any revenue increases. And that reflects the new dynamics on the Republican side. People are used to the idea that Republicans are always spend money on the military. But we're now in this new situation where there's a bunch of Republicans who believe in cutting the government more than they believe in expanding the military. In fact, they see the military as part of the big government that they don't like. Now, you know, I don't share their overall philosophy. I like the government when it, you know,
when it operates correctly.
I like the government when, you know, it does schools and libraries and stuff like that. I also don't like the government when it, you know, when half the budget half the discretionary budget is going to the military. But there is, you know, there is this new dynamic. There's this new political dynamic. Some of these Republicans are willing to cut the military. Some of these Republicans see the military spending as out of control. So we can make common cause there. And we have, you know, Barney Frank had this interview in the Boston Globe where he said, you know, these Tea Party guys, they were actually helpful with us in cutting the military budget, and they're suspicious of these wars and these foreign entanglements that have been pushed. And, you know, the military budget's got all this stuff that just hasn't been examined. Like, you know, why do we still have all these troops in Germany? Why do we still have all these troops in Japan? Why is the Pentagon running school? You know the Pentagon runs school?
Sure.
Tom Coburn, conservative Republican senator from Oklahoma, has called for $1 trillion in military cuts over 10 years. And one of the questions that he asked, if you look, he wrote a report on it, he said, why is the Pentagon running school? We have public schools. Send the soldiers' kids to our public school. So you see, there's space there. Once you get past this kind of like, oh, Republicans have to support military spending thing, and you actually look at what the military is doing, you start to examine, do we need all this stuff? Then you've got a possibility for a lot of cuts. You know, when military spending was just going up and up and up, there was no constraint. They could just spend whatever they wanted. So there's a lot of fat there now.
So we will see how this works out. Again, the piece is Why the Jobs Argument Against Military Cuts is Bogus, written by Robert Naiman over at truthout.org. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Robert Naiman's piece, his name. It'll take you right to his piece. Robert, I appreciate the time. I'm hoping you're right. I'm hoping there is some cutting here, and I'm hoping it's constructive.
Well, you know, it's up to us to contact our members of Congress in the recess and say, yes, cut the military budget by $1 trillion over 10 years.
There you go. Robert, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much, brother.
Good to be with you.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Okay.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Come on, Obama, do it. Stand up, stand tall, stand firm. Yes, you can. The president is thinking about issuing an executive order that would mitigate some of the damage done to our democracy by the Supreme Court's dastardly Citizen United edict, which unleashes unlimited amounts of secret corporate cash to pervert America's elections.
Obama's idea is simply to require that those corporations trying to get federal contracts disclose all of their campaign donations for the previous 2 years, including money they launder through such front groups as the National Chamber of Commerce. This approach says to those giants sucking up billions of our tax dollars for endless war, privatization of public services, etc., you're still free to shove trainloads of your shareholders' money into congressional and presidential races, but hey, just tell the public how much you're giving and to whom. Neat. It would be a clean, direct, and effective reform. So, of course, the corporate powers and their apologists are squealing like stuck pigs. Stephen Law, a Bush-Cheney operative who is now both a Wall Street Journal editorialist and the head of a secret corporate money fund, recently decried the very idea of public disclosure of contractor campaign contributions. When I was in the executive branch, he sniffed, mixing politics with procurement was called corruption. Yes, Steve, and y'all were corruption experts. Perhaps you've forgotten that we remember Halliburton, the Cheney-run corporation that helped put Bush in office and then was handed tens of billions in contracts, becoming the poster child of corrupt, no-bid procurement. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Obama, you can do it. Don't back down from these corporate sleazes. Sign that disclosure order. After all, if they're going to steal our elections, at least we should make them admit it to us.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails. Personally, got one over the weekend from Helen, and she talked about the Hershey situation. And you look at the reality is, and she said, you know, the whole reason she stopped buying Hershey chocolate is because, you know, a whole bunch of things. Having worked at Xcel, one of the places, you know, this place where these students rose up and said no more, she also points out the fact that, as we talked about last week, some of the children in Africa were being exploited. And, you know, I only buy fair share stuff. You know what? Stop supporting those companies who don't support reasonable labor standards and environmental standards. And, you know, there's an argument to be made there. But she went back and talked a little bit about her experience working at this Xcel. And again, you know, one of these things that another reason we need to have really massive labor law reform in this country. The fact that you can have a company like Xcel, and this whole Hershey situation is really just a small microcosm of the problem of our nation. It's all about shifting responsibility. And if you saw the Patriot News article, they pushed this idea that, well, you know, Hershey's not really to blame. The Xcel company, they're kind of to blame. And, you know, this SHS on-site solutions, they're the temp agency who employed the students. So maybe they're to blame. Or maybe it's this, you know, the organization that brought these kids here, the Center for Educational Travel, USA. Maybe it was their responsibility. They're to blame them. So it's a whole bunch of finger pointing. It's a whole bunch of blame going around. But here again, it's still Hershey. And for me, that's the end of the line. You know, if you've got somebody who's packaging your product, who's got your brand, I do believe that you're responsible for that. And I do believe, sorry, you're the one holding the bag. And as the one representative, you know, this guy, Mike Marcias, he's a public relations guy from New York. He said, look, what's dangerous about the situation Hershey's in? Is it could become part of a larger discussion nationwide about labor relations. And this is what I've been saying. People are starting to wake up and say, you know what, I'm tired of getting screwed. That's what this Verizon thing was about. The workforce said, you know what, no, I'm not going to let you screw me anymore. I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to fight back. And hopefully this is one of those moments where people go, I'm joining with you. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Ike on line one. How you doing tonight, Ike?
Hey, buddy. I'm
how you feeling?
Dodging bullets.
How you feeling? How's your health?
Okay, but I mean, much like a mechanic who ain't looked under the hood in 20, 30, 40 years, you know, they start to find other things, so it's ongoing, but I'm alive, but I'd like to speak up for cheap labor because that's who you're talking to here. I'm cheap labor, and I just want to speak past you a minute and say, hey, America, how you doing? I'm cheap labor. You know me. You love me. You love me all over the world, wherever you can find me. You use me. You abuse me. And you take, you know, in this country, as a matter of fact, you love to put me down. The bottom 50% of us, we control $2.4 trillion in this economy. The rest of you have it all. But yet, I'm sorry, when the tax man comes to the door, it looks like a rummage sale, doesn't it?
Yep.
Nobody wants to pay taxes. You don't want to pay for two wars you started, that you put us cheap labor guys into, that you never fight yourself. Hey, America, why do you hate me when I get sick? Why do you not care? Why do you not care when I pick up your garbage? Why do you not care when I cut your grass? Irrespective of what color I am or where I'm from. But even more so when I'm an American and when we got veterans sitting out with no jobs. Hey, America, what's the matter? They're not cheap enough for you? They fought for you. They suffer for you. Their families suffer. And you don't even have the gall to step up to the plate and pay them. Pay the bill on the murder you started. You don't care about none of us. Whether we pick up your garbage, paint your house, build your house, pave your roads, build your bridges, or anything else we do for you. And when we get sick, you want to throw us under the bus? You want to throw us to the bone heap? Is that who you are, America? Is that really who you are? Do you not care? Do you not care about Chinese prisoners? Do you not care about stolen organs or anything else that goes on? Do you not care? Because, by God, you know what? If it's America at the cheapest price possible, that's what you've got. And that's what you're going to get. The people sitting in the ivory tower is going to pay. They will pay.
Do you think? Do you really think? Do you think? Because I seem to believe that our global citizens will just go somewhere else. They're already building.
Yeah, guess what? Guess what, big money? When you ain't got nowhere else to go, where are you going to go? Because at some point, you know, you're going to sit still for a second. And when you do, then you've got a problem because you're going to be sitting somebody, you're going to be sitting your little lovely rosy red cheeks on somebody's property. And guess what? The people own the property. You don't. We do. We're not, you know, you worry about your dividend holders. You better worry about who owns the country. And that's us. We control it. We run it. And we make it happen. From your garbage to your everything that you do. You better learn your lesson before somebody has to teach it to you like it's been done in the past.
I think that's what Buffett's trying to
do. Utter the word, eat cake, my friend.
I think that's what Buffett's trying to point out to his billionaire friends. I don't think they're going to listen.
And by the way, I didn't write any of this down. This is all off the top of my head, and I'm just venting because you know what? I am a man of substance. I am a man that works hard. I am an American, and by God, I know we can do better than this, and I'm sick and tired of this crap. I'm sick of it. And they better learn their lesson. They lit the fuse a long time ago, but you know what? If you're not familiar with history, 34 to 36, if you're not familiar with history and FDR, if you're not familiar with history and 68, you know what? You're going to get it again. Keep pushing.
I appreciate the call, Ike. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
I appreciate the passion as well. And, you know, that's, there's a lot of emotion out here. And at some point, like he's saying, I worry that powder keg explodes. But like I said, over the weekend where we were at the AFSCME conference and we were out in Franklin County for their event, I think we're starting to see folks coming together, getting it, having some great conversations with people who getting it. And that, to me, a positive thing. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Michael Bryan about his upcoming album right back after this. You
Jordy. Rick Smith.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
With the PSECU Home Equity Line of Credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer is a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to psecu.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Your government spends your money on tanks. How about we bail out the people? Vaccines in our meat and pour it in our water. Mother Earth just check the weather. So much injustice, so much manipulation. Praying to a God that don't exist, we suffer any salvation. Enough intimidation, and in the all in all, I'll never be just a brick in the wall. This isn't easy for the big brother's live and well. He's in your pocket on your cell phone right now.
Constant, welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. And if you've got one of these nifty smartphones, and if you missed any portion of our program, you can download the Stitcher app and take the program with you anywhere you go. And if you miss any of the program, just go to our website. It's all there for your engagement, your entertainment, and your convenience. I saw this thing this morning that it just kind of caught my eye, this Agency France Press article. The headline read, World Bank Ready to Help Libya. And I'm going, you know, anytime the World Bank says they're ready to help, to me, that's a sign of trouble. But the Agency France Press wrote that Monday it has been monitoring Libya, according to the World Bank. They've been watching the economic situation there. And would be guiding their member countries on resuming its activities within the country. Evidently, the 187-nation development lender is looking to guide some of their shareholders in, get the banksters in there to get their claws into the country. The head guy there, he said, for the duration of the conflict, to the extent possible, we have monitored Libya's economic situation in coordination with the UN, but we have no staff in Tripoli. Now, for me, you know, I look at this and I go, boy, they've got to be licking their chops because there's some oil there, I guess. And, you know, like Trump says, you know, maybe we should go in there and steal their oil. Not sure that that's going to happen. This is a long road down the way. I hope, you know, there's part of me that says, you know, I know we're going to get sucked into this one way or another. I'm hoping not. I hope the rest of the region, the rest of the world, they do it. Look, you know, if China's going to be the new superpower, which, you know, it appears is going to be, let them take care of it. Let somebody else be the world cop for a change. Because I got to be honest with you, I'm kind of tired of it. I'm kind of tired of being screwed over every single time. And this, I gotta be honest, this mortgage thing, the developments that have come out that we gave another $1.2 trillion to these criminals on Wall Street, these big bankers, just infuriates me. especially when you look at how many homeowners that we've talked to on this program who were in the process of losing their home. I remember a woman back on my weekend show a couple years back, right when everything started to go south. One of the first waves of people hit were the folks who got sucked in with these adjustable rate mortgages. And she thought when she signed the form, it was a fixed rate. And then the rate started going up. When she started the mortgage, payments were $900 a month. Very doable for their income bracket. As things kept going up, payments were $1,200, $1,500, finally $2,100 a month. They couldn't make the payments. First wave right out the door. And you look at this and you go, they gave $1.2 trillion in basically interest-free money to these big criminals. And they're admitting they could have saved 6.5 million families from losing their homes. I mean, it's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing when you look at the fact that we had the ability to take care of this, and we didn't. And all we had to do was, as we had done in the past, when FDR passed the Home Ownership Loan Corporation, and they said, you know what, the government's gonna buy back these properties, everybody's gonna take a haircut. The banks are gonna take a haircut. The homeowner's gonna have to take a little bit of a haircut here. Everybody's gonna kick into this, but we're gonna stop the free fall. We're gonna stop it from completely collapsing. We could have done that. And now we're seeing it hasn't really helped. We gave them all this money, and what did they do? They were supposed to be modifying these loans. They were supposed to, you know, because we believe in the free market. You know, got to have that for-profit people out there doing what they do. And all they did was line their own pockets. And this is what I said from the beginning. This should have been a government-run, quasi-government-run, whatever you want to call it. But it should have been something overseen by Congress where you say, you know what, these 6.5 million homes, we're going to do like we did back then. We're going to buy them back. We're going to make sure that they're serviced for 30 years. We'll shut it down just like they did back then. Probably turn a very small, modest profit, but we're going to stop the collapse. For me, that's what's important. And, you know, you listen to these stories, and you go back and you listen to these people, the guy just recently we talked to, the day his son comes back from Iraq is the day they foreclose on him. And he did everything that they asked of him. And they still stole his house back. And he put down $125,000 on a house. And to me, I'm telling you, this is the theft. Right here, this is the heist. This is the ripoff. He put $125,000 down on the house. Made 5 years worth of payments. And as you know, those first 5 years, that's when you pay the interest. That's when they get most of their money back. You don't build much more equity. But you pay heavy interest those first 5 years. So they got the $125,000. They got the 5 years worth of interest. The guy's now in trouble. The economy tanks. His business tanks. He's trying to make ends meet. They're not going to renegotiate. They're not going to refinance his loan. They're not going to modify it. They're going to steal that house from him because they got his $125,000. They got 5 years worth of interest payments. And now they got the house back that they can hock to somebody else. And they can pay 5 years worth of payments again. All interest up front. It's a ripoff. But that's what the banking industry in this country has come to. We're paying for their gambling excesses. And we have, you know, from the government level, we've done nothing to change the system. You know, this whole thing that they're fighting on, the financial reform, this isn't going to do it. This isn't Glass-Steagall again. We haven't separated the gambling houses from the regular old boring banks. That should have been first and foremost. But we haven't done that. We haven't done any of the things that helped stop that. In fact, every time we deregulate, every time we pull regulation away, what happens? Savings and loan crisis thanks to Reagan. This collapse thanks to Clinton and the Graham Leach Bliley. What more do we have to learn? Anyway, let's take a quick break. I guess we don't have Mike O'Brien on the line. All righty, so we don't. This better be worth it. That's all I got to say. You know, because Anyway, you ever have one of those nights where the phone lines, you book things and you just don't know? Tonight's one of those swinging in the wind nights. I hope you get that. One of those swinging in the wind nights. And again, you know, you're stuck kind of out on the ledge. You ever had that? Where now you're hanging there, you're going, well, you know, do I go into depth into this and end up pushing the segment next for another 10 minutes? That's kind of where I'm at. So, you know, welcome to my world. It's been an interesting ride. I hate when people are late. Can we go to a break now? We're right back.
Thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Left behind. Your government spends your money on tanks. How about we bail out the people? Not the banks. Vaccines in our meat and pour it in our water. Mother Earth is check the weather. So much injustice, so much manipulation. Praying to a God that don't exist, be something in me. Salvation, nothing's intimidation. And in the all in all, I'll never be just a brick in the wall. This isn't easy for the big brother's live and well. He's in your pocket on your cell phone right now. Constant movement, constant movement, constant movement, constant movement.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. That's a song by Kill the Autocrat. Their new album going to be out here at the end of the month, I guess. Their first full-length album, A New World Disorder. I've got the head guy there from Kill the Autocrat, Mike O'Brien, on the line. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, no problem, Rick. How you doing?
I'm doing great. The album sounds good. I think we use a couple of your songs here on the program fairly often. And the reason we asked you on is, you know, there was so much of what we're seeing going on with the fighting in Wisconsin and in Ohio and all across the country is finally people are starting to stand up and fight back, and the music is coming along, I think.
Yeah, you know, someone's got to write the soundtrack to all these things, right? And that's just one of the devices that gets our message out, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then again, people, I don't think, can really understand all these things until they go through it themselves, and that also builds their movement.
And you know, come to talk about that. You yourself on strike for or locked out for over a year, as I understand.
Yeah, I was on a strike with a company called Valet. They bought what used to be called Inco up here in Canada. Now that they had bought us, they become the second largest mining company in the world. And they were adamant when they came here on not changing our culture, and they wanted everything to stay the same. Well, that kind of absolutely, totally went out the window when our first collective bargaining came along with them. So, and they just ripped our collective agreement to shreds, wanted us all to go on a DC pension. All the workers that are there now have the option to turn to a DC pension, but I think maybe only three of them have actually gone to the DC pension. Everyone's still on the DB, but all new hires will be on the DC. So that just sets us up in 10 years to have a fight against our own brothers and sisters when contract time comes up, right?
Yeah, and the DC is defined contribution and the DB defined benefits. Here in the U.S., that fight's already been lost. We're all DC here. Most people in this country, well, the non-union folks, they're all defined contribution, the whole 401k thing that's been rammed down our throat. And you know, as you pointed out, this isn't just happening here in the U.S. It's now infiltrated into your neck of the woods in Canada and around the globe.
Oh, absolutely. Right now we have a right-wing nut job as a prime minister, Stephen Harper, and he's got a majority government up here in Canada. And we actually have a provincial election coming up soon. And I've seen in municipalities like Toronto, Rob Ford is their conservative mayor, and he already took away the Toronto transit employees. They're now deemed an essential service, and they have lost the right to strike. And he was also talking about privatizing the garbage workers, and we're in for a real mess. So.
Sounds like Wisconsin is moving up north a little bit. The same attacks that are going on there and in Ohio and in Michigan. It sounds like the playbook has been moved north of the border.
I'm sure Stephen Harper takes a lot of cues from the Republicans in the South.
And, you know, you look at this and you got to go, this is where workers from all around the globe have to come together, where we've got to stop being pitted against one another, because, you know, that's what we've done here in the U.S. I don't know how it is in Canada, but it's, you know, these illegal aliens who are coming screwing everything up, when it's not. It's just they're the easy target. They're the red meat we're being pitted against.
Yeah, they obviously, you know, they'll try to push us, like, you know, the poor people all against each other, right? So we don't come after them, band together and come right after them, right? So
yeah, absolutely. Your song One Day Longer, a song we use here on the program quite often, because I think it's something, and I like the song. I think it's a message that we have to convey to working people, that we have to stick together against the wealth class, even as long as it takes.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we you know, that saying One Day Longer comes from long strikes, right? We'll be here one day longer than the evil, greedy corporation, right?
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think now we're seeing that. I don't know, I'm not sure if Verizon ratified a deal, but I know they're back to work.
Yeah, they're going back to work. There hasn't been a deal. But, you know, here's the thing. Sometimes a strike is used just to kind of jumpstart things a little bit, get people back to the bargaining table. And in this case, that's what it was used for. Verizon, they dug in their heels. And this strike kind of made them go, oh, boy, we better get back to the table and start talking, because our infrastructure is crumbling around us.
Well, I'd like to commend those workers, because I was following online, and they ran a really tight shop in their union.
Yeah, I think, again, you know, I think in 20 years you may look back at this, much like we look at the Patco strike, as that moment in history that began the downfall when Reagan fired the Patco workers, the downfall. This may be that beginning of people taking notice, going, you know, collective bargaining, actually does help people.
Yeah, and we're so connected now through social media, you know, and the internet, that, you know, it's a lot harder for them to hide their dirty laundry, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, the album is called A New World Disorder by Kill the Autocrat. We've got a link at our site at therixsmithshow.com where you can get the single off of the album. You know, what got you started in this, if you don't mind me asking?
I've always been drawn to music my whole life. I was in a couple bands. I grew up in Sudbury, Ontario, which is about 4 hours north of Toronto. So it's not exactly in the middle of nowhere, but it kind of is. And I never really had access to, like, electronic music or really knew anything about it. So I started playing with my friends that were in punk rock bands and rapping over top of it. And we got to that day and age where you could take stuff off the internet for free. Not that I would ever do anything like that, but and we started using like beat making programs and stuff like that, and just evolved into that. I kind of gave up on music for a bit, and I went and actually lost my band. I was still doing it a little bit at the time, but I went and got a job at the place that my father and my grandfather worked. I became a miner. And within a year of doing that, it all totally blew up in my face, and I ended up on the picket line for a year.
Are you still in the mine now, or are you doing the music for
No, me? I'm still in the mine now. I work a 4-5, 5-4 rotation, so 4 days on, 5 days off, 5 days on, 4 days off, and I'm actually a cage tender, so I control the elevator that goes up and down underground. So I'm still there. I go back to work Wednesday. So on my days off, I'm traveling around the world fighting the man.
And fighting the man we need to be doing. And we need to figure out how we reach across borders, not just with Canada, but also with Mexico and China and India, and how we bring working people together to raise up everybody instead of being at each other's throats and build this kind of cross-border real movement in the globe internationally.
Yeah, if you look at some of the programs that the United Steelworkers have been doing with international solidarity, of course we have Workers Uniting in the UK, some merger with the unions over there, and I believe we just signed a treaty with the Los Mineros in Mexico, and actually had the pleasure of going to visit a strike in Mexico at Cananea, which is with they've been on strike with Grupo Mexico for 4 years now.
Jeez.
They'd actually jailed their union vice president, and we had smuggled their president, Napoleon Gomez. He's actually staying up in Canada right now, but he's not allowed to go visit his family in Mexico. So, and during our strike, we did a lot of great work with the Coot Union in Brazil, which represents the workers at Vale's plants down there in their mines.
And, you know, you look at this, and I got to be honest, I'm hopeful on one hand, but, you know, sometimes it's easy to fall into despair as you see the exploitation of labor across this globe. And, you know, right here in our backyard with Hershey exploiting these kids on J-1 visas, it's, you know, sometimes it's easy to give in to despair.
Yeah, you know, it's real hard. I see... maybe like a lot of people have fallen into that. I know I still deal with this at work every day, being a union steward, and there's a lot of bad things that did come out of our contract, and the guys are really frustrated at work. But I find, if you always have people to stand up there and say something about it, then those people will, you know, some people, not everyone is going to be that guy to voice their opinion in front of people. You know, people are scared.
Yeah.
But as long as you have leaders within these workplaces, you know, the workers will get behind them, and there'll be solidarity.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Mike O'Brien. His band Kill the Autocrat, they're releasing their first album, A New World Disorder. We've got a link at our site at therickssmithshow.com. It debuts August 30th. You can get a quick peek of the new single that they've got out. Just click on Mike O'Brien's name. They're at our site at therickssmithshow.com. You know, again, you know, what kind of response are you getting from the folks you work with? I can imagine that it's got to be fairly popular with the guys on the who walk the picket line with you and that you work with.
The support, not only locally, but I just on the Young Leaders Committee at for the United Steelworkers, and I went and just last week I went and played the convention, and just so inspiring and humbling just to hear people tell me like how. You know, how much they believe in me and how much this is necessary in the world right now. You know, I haven't heard of any labor songs since, I don't know, Pete Seeger.
I can't remember, Florence, what was her name? The one, which side are you on? I forget. But, you know, again, you're right. And I've been saying that, you know, I'd love to play a lot more labor-friendly music. I wish someone would update the old labor tunes because I think they're still relevant. I think they're still important for people to hear. But just in a format that this generation or this century is interested in.
Yeah, you're not really seeing anything. I think I see people like artists like almost take it there, but they don't really go all the way and say what, I don't know if they're like censoring what their feelings or whatever, or they can't relate to something like that, but you don't really see anyone like, you know,
Yeah, I mean, I think of, you know, I think of the Vietnam era, and there were tons of songs that came out of that. I think of, different times in our country's history, here in the U.S. and I'm sure in Canada, where, a certain song was put with a certain movement. And that's why I think it's so important what you're doing, to put these thoughts into music, into what folks want to hear.
Well, thanks a lot, brother.
And again, the website, you have a website people can go to?
Yeah, 682records.com or killtheautocrat.com.
And we've got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Michael Bryan's name. It'll take you right there. What kind of response have you gotten from this album so far?
Well, the album comes out August 30th, but there's been a lot of hype on it. I got friends from all over the world hitting. I think one of our video for Constant Movement had up to 70,000 hits from Egypt alone during the revolution that was going on there, which was pretty...
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah, and also Colombia and,
So you're really bridging the gaps that we were just talking about. You're reaching out to folks around the globe and pulling folks together.
Yeah, well, we can all talk to each other in seconds on the Internet no matter where we are, right? So...
That's the amazing thing about what you're doing, and I think it's great. I'm not a huge fan of the type of music, but I like the message.
Your assistant already warned me.
Well, to be honest, I played in crummy rock bands for years as a kid, and that's kind of my deal. But
okay, I didn't want to say that, but that's what he wrote the email to.
No, he used another word. I know that.
Yeah, but still.
You know, it's one of those things. But I give you nothing but credit for it, and I hope folks will go check it out because I think it's great what you're doing.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, thanks a lot, brother. Yeah, it'll be on iTunes, or you can go directly to our website, or it'll be on Amazon.
Yeah, I encourage everybody, go buy it. Go buy it from Mike O'Brien, the Kill the Autocrat, so that he can get out of the coal mines, right?
Nickel mines.
Oh, nickel mines.
Yeah. I'd like to add one thing. It's a very sad day up here in Canada. I don't know if you had heard.
I haven't. I don't think I have. What?
The leader and probably one of the greatest Canadian politicians in history, Jack Layton, passed away of cancer this morning.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's been a really rough day here. The New Democratic Party is the labor arm of politics, and we just came off of a huge win in the federal election to become the official opposition in the House. And he was the only major politician federally that came up here during our strike and actually had our back. So it was pretty sad to see him go today.
Our thoughts are with him. I appreciate you pointing that out. Again, the album is A New World Disorder. I hope folks will go check it out. Kill the Autocrats. I appreciate your time, Mike.
No problem, brother. Thank you very much. I'll be in Minnesota on the... Hold on here. I'll tell you the date. And I'll be in Duluth on Labor Day for a parade there. And then I will be in Minnesota for the AFL on September 4th at the Labor Pavilion at the Minnesota State Fair. So I'm looking forward to, and hopefully coming back to Madison soon to visit everybody.
Outstanding. Mike, I appreciate your time, brother. Thanks so much.
Thank you, brother. Take care.
Yeah. You look at this, and again, I at some point, I'm hoping that the music of this generation rises up and we put that song to this era, Madison, what happened in Wisconsin, what's happening in Ohio, what's probably going to start happening here in Pennsylvania. The hope is that, we're able to do something with that. We're going to take a quick break right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, back after this.
Lost Houston arraignments, members under company surveillance. Public divided, either they love us or they hate us. Profit billions off our back, and it's still not enough. They should have took into account
that we never give up.
We'll be here one day longer.
One day longer.
The people's voice is stronger.
The people's voice is stronger.
We're not hard for our money, we work hard for respect. Keep fighting for these rights, the generations that's next. One day longer.
Class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. No community has been hit harder in the stalled economic recovery than that of African Americans. The national unemployment rate for that community is 16%, nearly twice as high as the overall national average. Some regions of the country are even seeing African-American unemployment numbers creeping toward 50%. In Inglewood, California, for example, the rate is 35%. This weekend, three congresswomen from the region held an economic summit where more than 1,000 citizens turned out. Democrat Maxine Waters was one of the speakers, and she put some of the blame for the failure to get the economy moving on the inability of the Tea Party to negotiate.
You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
An LA jobs fair is being planned for the end of August. Two major unions are opposing the proposed Keystone XL oil pipeline project. Doug Cunningham reports.
The Amalgamated Transit Union and the Transport Workers Union are calling on the U.S. State Department to not approve the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline that would carry oil from the tar sands in Alberta, Canada, to Texas. The unions say they share the Environmental Protection Agency's concerns about potential pollution of groundwater for tens of millions of people. The tar sands project has already destroyed vast areas of boreal forest in Canada. Sean Sweeney is director of Cornell's Global Labor Institute.
There's an attitude in the leadership of those unions where the old ways of doing things, there's a recognition that that has not gotten us very far. And there's a growing awareness that climate change is serious enough that it warrants everybody's attention in the labor movement and across border society. They have the kind of approach that replicated across the labor movement would be much better than it is at the moment. I would suggest that unions who support the project should withdraw their support.
Sweeney says the ATU and TWU are progressive unions that realize we need jobs and infrastructure investments that don't damage the environment.
45,000 Verizon workers are returning to work today. The Communications Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers announced this weekend that while a new contract agreement hasn't been reached, the company has indicated interest in negotiating seriously. Verizon had proposed a list of 100 concessions to be included in the new contract for employees in their landline division, but the two unions representing those employees said that long list of demands was unacceptable and the workers walked out. However, according to the New York Times, Verizon has indicated it hasn't taken any of those demands off the table.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
How this whole 2012 Republican presidential race runs out. The Borowitz Report, Andy Borowitz reports that the mystery surrounding Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's whereabouts was resolved today as the dictator announced his candidacy for the Republican presidential nomination in a town hall meeting in Concord, New Hampshire. And announcing his candidacy, the Libyan madman joins a Republican field which is believed to number in excess of 700 candidates. While some New Hampshire Republicans seem surprised to see Colonel Gaddafi shaking hands and kissing babies, an aide for the Libyan strongman said his transformation to GOP candidate made perfect sense. Also saying that in those final days in Tripoli, he was becoming increasingly disconnected from reality. So I think he'll fit right in here. Mr. Gaddafi, dressed in his trademark yellow turban and matching robe, to mixed reviews in his first appearance on the campaign trail, with some New Hampshire citizens saying that his six-hour stump speech was badly in need of pruning. Additionally, some felt that his rhetoric needed to be toned down just a touch, especially his closing line about fighting for the Republican nomination until the last drop of blood. But others gave him high marks for his grasp of history and geography, which most agreed was stronger than Michelle Bachmann's, perhaps underscoring the challenges that lie ahead for Mr. Gaddafi in his quest for the GOP nod. Current polls have him in the back of the pack, leading former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, but trailing the pizza guy. Unfortunately, one pollster says, from Muammar Gaddafi, he might be out of step with the current crop of Republican candidates. There's a perception out there that he's too moderate. So there you go. You got to love the Borowitz report. Here's something that might catch you as funny. This California lawyer who happens to be an activist, a Palin fan, if you will, a guy named Peter Singleton, kind of like, I think, like many people who suffer from this hero worship. He seems to think that he's got the inside scoop. He's got what's on the QT. The Iowa activist claims that Sarah Palin is going to announce her candidacy for president this month, in September. He seems to think that the Tea Party event he's helping put together may be a place for K. Sarah to springboard into the race. In fact, he told the National Review that Labor Day will kick off the Republican campaign for the nomination and that Sarah is going to make a major, major speech. Now remember, he's in Iowa. He's the representative for Organize for Palin. And, you know, he's out there, you know, saying, well, you know, I believe she'll run. I just can't see her. Just can't see her sitting this election out. And I look at that position and I go, you know, what that tells me is that he really doesn't know any more about Sarah Palin or her thoughts on the White House bid than we do. In fact, I would think he would be the last guy to know what, and the last guy in the room to know what's going on. If there was anything on the QT, he would be the very last guy told. According to the Wall Street Journal, back in April, he claimed he had never met Palin or that he knew no one from her camp. So somehow, he's got the QT. He's got what's on the down low. He's never met her, doesn't know anybody in the camp, but he knows. He must be a gut feeling. And I'll tell you what my gut feeling is, and keep an eye on this guy. Remember his name, Peter Singleton. The stalker comes to mind. Just insaniac. That's what comes to mind. In fact, one woman who evidently had a conversation with him at some conservative principals conference, she said he kept saying we, but he wouldn't clarify who we was. And she said, my gut feeling was he was working on her campaign. Here's the thing. He's not. Again, think stalker. So the question is, will she run? I mean, she's kicking off or she's going to re-kick off or restart or, you know, kind of jump back into the One Nation tour. Kind of broke off for a while. You know, there's part of me that thinks she suffers a little bit from ADD, but, you know, don't want to, you know, make any claims that I can't back up. Just a thought. You know, I'm going to take a bus tour. I'm not going to take a bus tour. Let me start it again. I'm going to run for president. I'm not. I'm going to do TV. I'm not. I don't know why anyone would even consider voting for this woman, given her track record. But here's the thing. Karl Rove seems to think that she may plan to run. So that he said, quote, I'd put a little money that she gets in, then she doesn't. Because of the schedule she's got next week in Iowa, he says, you know, it looks like that of a candidate, not a celebrity. Frank Luntz is saying, you know, who I think is probably the brightest guy in the room there, there's no room for her. He told ABC's Jack Tapper that, you know, look, not going to run. I don't think she can, he said. Michelle Bachmann and Palin, they operate in the exact same space. And I think they do. I think Bachmann would take her out. Because I think Luntz is right. They do have similar personalities. They attract that same low-knowledge, low-brainwave voter. So like he said, there's no space for her right now. He said there is space for Chris Christie, but not for her. And I kind of agree. Christie may be that guy that blue-collar Republicans look to. One of those people who, you know, even if he's wrong, we like him because he's decisive and he makes decisions. He's the decider, even if he's making the wrong decisions again. So that's kind of another interesting little tidbit there. It'll be interesting to watch as we come full circle in this whole thing. Over the weekend, I don't know if you saw this, Dennis Kucinich. Evidently, this whole thing, him being redistricted right out of a seat in Congress, has him going to Seattle. He was at Hempfest, where he gave a speech saying, you know, America, you got to open up, America. Show yourself, mass action. He says, this is why and how recent movements for freedom in Tanzania and Egypt gained momentum. People getting out in the streets, and I agree with him. I think the more folks we get out, the more people we get, saying we want a slice of the pie, we're tired of not getting our fair share, might help. So it's interesting that he's going to Seattle. There may be something to that, that whole jump out to the West Coast, to hold on to a seat, cause, you know, I think he's gonna get redistricted right out. So that'll be interesting. Here's an interesting little thing. The big money people, the folks who in 2008 spent a whole lot of money on Barack Obama, financial disclosures show that 67 of these Wall Street executives who had been former Obama backers have now moved their money over to Mitt Romney. So you're seeing a little bit of the money moving around. According to The Hill, some $147,000 from bankers who live in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut have contributed that to Romney thus far, and not to Obama. So it's going to be interesting because it's going to come down, I think, to, you know, who winds up with the big bucks in their pockets. And you put that with the fact that, just today that information came out about the $1.2 trillion that is now gone, I guess, that we gave to the big bankers to help help us hold off this depression, didn't happen all that well for us. We have surely helped out the investor class there. Rick Santorum was on one of the right-wing radio programs, a guy named Steve Maltzball. He was on there talking about Maxine Waters, and they played a clip for him. And Maxine Waters said, this is a tough game. Politics is a tough game. You can't be intimidated. You can't get frightened. But as far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party people, they can go straight to hell. And what she was talking about is, look, she needs to push for job creation policies. She needs to push for an economy that works for working people. And, the T-Twits be damned. Well, they played that for her, and, Santorum chimes in, she's vile. She's one of these people who hate America. And it's what you would expect from Santorum, which is why he's so far down in the polls. But here again, he's got to try and make a name for himself by lashing out. Where's his jobs plan? Oh, yeah, tax cuts. Tax cuts have worked so well to this point, have they not? We've done such an amazing job of reheating the economy and getting people back to work with all those tax handouts we gave out during the Bush years and even with the recovery bill that Obama put out, which was supposed to be a stimulus. It was more of a tax handout. We should have been investing in roads and bridges. We should have been doing things to get people back to work instead of saying, here, have some more money. Go create those jobs over in China. And finally, Paul Ryan has said he is not considering a run for the White House. He said, I sincerely appreciate the support from those eager to chart a brighter future for the next generation. While humbled by the encouragement, I have not changed my mind, and therefore I am not seeking our party's nomination for president. Not that you'd get it. Not that you'd get it. Let's take a quick break. We're going to come right back after this.
Right. The Rick Smith. Smith Show.
Come on, Obama. Do it. Stand up. Stand tall. Stand firm. Yes, you can. The president is thinking about issuing an executive order that would mitigate some of the damage done to our democracy by the Supreme Court's dastardly Citizens United edict, which unleashes unlimited amounts of secret corporate cash to pervert America's elections. Obama's idea is simply to require that those corporations trying to get federal contracts disclose all of their campaign donations for the previous 2 years, including money they launder through such front groups as the National Chamber of Commerce. This approach says to those giants sucking up billions of our tax dollars for endless war, privatization of public services, etc., you're still free to shove trainloads of your shareholders' money into congressional and presidential races, but hey, just tell the public how much you're giving and to whom. Neat. It would be a clean, direct, and effective reform. So, of course, the corporate powers and their apologists are squealing like stuck pigs. Stephen Law, a Bush-Cheney operative who is now both a Wall Street Journal editorialist and the head of a secret corporate money fund, recently decried the very idea of public disclosure of contractor campaign contributions. When I was in the executive branch, he sniffed, mixing politics with procurement was called corruption. Yes, Steve, and y'all were corruption experts. Perhaps you've forgotten that we remember Halliburton, the Cheney-run corporation that helped put Bush in office and then was handed tens of billions in contracts, becoming the poster child of corrupt, no-bid procurement. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Obama, you can do it. Don't back down from these corporate sleazes. Sign that disclosure order. After all, if they're going to steal our elections, at least we should make them admit it to us.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy, The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, just go there. You can download our podcast. Also, if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take the program with you anytime on the go. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Mike on line one. How are you doing tonight, Mike?
All right. You know, Michelle Bachmann got a really bad beat on this thing about wishing Elvis a happy birthday.
Okay.
I mean, given her belief system, wasn't August 16th, 2011, the 34th anniversary of Elvis's being born again in Christ?
That I do not know. I wonder if that is that true?
I would think if you had her belief system, you would have that. But she apologized for it, so she apparently doesn't know what her own belief system is.
Oh, okay, I mean, I get what you're saying. All right, yeah.
You get the drift
now
there.
I'm getting. I'm thinking born again. I get it.
And dying.
Yep. I get it.
Heaven to. I mean, because after all, Elvis had to be forgiven for all those sins of
a whole multitude. If you
promoting that backseat behavior and those children back there in the 50s who took their parents. Ramblers with fold down seats out onto those country roads.
Yeah, how I got here.
The blue suede shoes and that.
Yep. Yep.
So Elvis, you know, should have had to pay a little bit for that. But I mean, you know, the basic thing is Elvis, the religious right hated at the time. He went and did gospel songs, so they loved him. But I mean, if she is going to be this person of the religious right and wish him a happy birthday, didn't that mean that she would have had to believe that he was born again to go be with Christ?
Yeah, I get your point on that.
And apparently she didn't understand that that's what her belief system is.
But here again, I think you're hitting on
a... Does she believe this, or is she a spawn of Satan?
Well, I think the spawn of Satan. But here's the thing. I think you're hitting on a very important theme with a lot of religious folks. who espouse the type of views that she does, and this whole extreme radical right-wing view that they really don't understand what their religion teaches. I'm hearkening back to an interview I did with the pastor James David Manning, who you should Google. He's a riot. But he came on the program, and I asked him, you know, if he supported the Ten Commandments being plastered all over, and he said he did. And I asked him to name them, and he didn't. He said, I can read them from the book, and I said, can you tell me them? And he wouldn't.
He would have promoted a different Ten Commandments than the Catholics used.
Well, either way, to me, you know, they're basically the same, with a little couple of variations, but I want people to know them. I don't want them plastered all over the place, because I've got this theory, and maybe you'll agree with me. The very people who want the Ten Commandments plastered everywhere are the people who need them plastered everywhere to remind them to be decent human beings.
Yeah, I don't know that. Essentially, these are the Sharia law people, except on the Christian side.
Yeah. Well, they scare me.
You know, that they want to promote that. But, I mean, you also had Perry down there. A kid asked him about when the earth was formed, and he said he didn't know. But, hey, what happened to Bishop Usher? I mean, Bishop Usher back in the 20s or 30s of the 1900s had decided that the earth was formed in 4004 B.C., and as one commentator on it had said, apparently had taken it out later to being October, November 4th or 3rd, and it was like a Tuesday morning at 9 a.m.
It's convenient,
you know,
when you can make up your own facts.
People calculate that backwards. They say that the 13 billion year old Earth is fake because supposedly God has put out carbon dating as a way to fool scientists.
Interesting.
Rather than putting out carbon dating as a way for scientists to come up with a better answer than the clowns that think that they are ministers and can figure it out from translations, fourth generational translations of words that are partially there and not partially there thanks to small bugs eating part of the papyrus.
So you're not buying the end of the world's coming here. I guess November he's recalculated.
The Mayans may have had it right, but then again, who knows? And that was 2012.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of people, and we were down here on the street a couple months ago watching the two different. They each had their own date when the world was coming to an end. They were arguing, and I said, "What if a bus jumped the curb and took them both out, and they're the end of the world for both of them?"
You needed to ask him whether or not God might have used a metric date.
You cracked me up.
You know, because of that. But, you know, it's just this utter nonsense of what they're doing. Perry says that the children should have the right to decide which they want to believe. Does he allow them the same right in Texas to believe that 2 + 3 = 8? Because they don't want to believe it's 5?
Yeah, well. I would guess. I mean, understand, he was a D student. So, yeah, I mean, we had Bush, who was a C student. No, because I think this guy's the dangerous one. I really do. I believe Rick Perry is the dangerous guy here. And I've likened him to Damien Thorne. Not many people get the reference, but I do think if he's elected president, it will be the end of the world.
We got to find out what happened to Texas. I mean, we went from people like Lyndon Johnson running for president from Texas to then all of a sudden Conley, and then Bush 2, and then Perry?
Well, I would even say Bush 1. You know,
Bush 1 was kind of...
He was kind of a monitor, but he sold his soul to the devil to be vice president.
Yeah.
That was the problem there. So you're not all that worried about the Republican field and the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs?
Oh, of course, but I mean, they tend to have mistakes that nobody points out. I mean, like Sarah Palin with the Paul Revere story.
Yeah, we pointed it out, but you know.
Yeah, but I mean, nobody pointed out this. What did Paul Revere do for a job?
I don't know. What did Paul Revere do?
He was a silversmith.
Okay.
So if he's out there ringing bells at the British, what kind of bells is he ringing? Silver Bells? And Silver Bells is a Christmas song, So apparently Paul Revere was out there trying to Christianize the British, who gave up Christianity for divorce.
That's beautiful.
But Sarah Palin didn't get that one.
No, that wasn't part of the made-up. She was thinking on her feet. You know, you need to be her comedy writer. That's good stuff.
Yeah, but, it's just there that you got to be able to read between their lines. The problem is that no president has has honestly won the presidency after, during his term, or when his party had gas prices increase a great deal during the term. Nixon, Ford, it went over to Carter. Carter, with the price going from 69 cents a gallon to a buck a gallon, it went to Reagan. Bush 1 had it go up with the Iraq war to about a buck 30, it went to Clinton. When Clinton was leaving office last year, it went up to about a buck 50, a buck 60. Gore lost. 2004, it went up above $2 a gallon for the first time ever, and Bush had to cheat in Ohio to win. 2008, it went up to close to $4 a gallon, and the Republicans were taken out of office. And if you repeat that thing here, it's going to be a Republican landslide 2012.
Well, it's taking that into consideration. It's not surprising that Michelle Bachmann, who we started this with, promised to bring it down to $2.
Yeah. Well, they're not going to get that, and they're not going to get their national debt reduced, because if you look at, what would you guess if Barack Obama did the second best ever in reducing the increase in the national debt from the presidency of Gerald Ford? What do you think? It was $11.9 trillion after Bush 2's final budget went through. What do you think the national debt would be after 8 years of Obama?
Well, I think it goes, if I've seen the numbers right, I think it goes up to 16 trillion.
Keep going. You're talking Clinton, and Clinton increased taxes his first year. That's something that's not going to occur at all during Obama's first term.
So what's the number?
It would be about 23 to 24 trillion, because the best person other than Clinton was Carter, and under Carter it went up by 2.04 times. Under Bush 2, it went up by 2.05. Under Ford, it would have gone up, it would have been something in the 33 trillion range, about 34 trillion under Reagan, if you went with it. The thing is that they're not going to get the debt down this way, because it's gone up in every presidency since Ford, to a great deal, with the exception of that of Clinton. And one, Clinton came off of the fall of the Soviet Union. Defense spending should have been going down somewhat. He increased taxes in his first year, so it happened to pull back the taxes up closer to what they were under Reagan, when Reagan took office. And the thing is that that's what you need to do. You've got to increase the taxes on the wealthiest if you're going to cut into this national debt problem at all.
Yeah, and that's the common sense. And we've got to have trade policies that bring jobs back to the U.S.
Also, Clinton didn't have the Clinton trade policies to screw him over in the first portion of his years.
Point well taken. But it's the whole neoliberal trade agenda that has destroyed not only this country, but is taking down the globe as we set up third world countries and developing nations to be manufacturers to give us cheap goods. But here's the thing. We don't have any more money to buy it.
So, well, the banks all want to be the new feudal lords running the world.
And they are. Mike, I appreciate the call, brother.
Okay, good to talk to you.
Call back anytime.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. We'll be back with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Right back after this.
Save the USA, drowning in crafted lies. Save the USA, every single I'm taking all my money and shipping it offshore. Do the job and you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
are when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your rights. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. Victoria Jones Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you very much.
So what's the big news this evening?
Well, what we're hearing out of Libya, this is just very strange because the reports all Monday have been that, well, we don't know where Muammar Gaddafi is, but we know that his son and heir apparent Saif al-Islam has been captured. And we know that his other son, Mohammed, has been captured. Well, what we're hearing now is that Saif al-Islam Gaddafi made an appearance at a Tripoli hotel early Tuesday. Apparently, one of the remaining holdouts for Gaddafi supporters saying his father remained in Tripoli and the rebels have been lured into a trap. And there's no immediate explanation from the National Transitional Council about that, because they said that three Gaddafi sons were in custody. Also, earlier, Libya's ambassador to the U.S. told CNN that another Gaddafi son, Mohammed Gaddafi, had escaped from rebel custody. So it's all a bit confusing, really.
So it is a bit confusing. But what I do know is going to happen, as soon as this works itself out, the World Bank is going to jump right in there.
Well, a lot of people are planning on jumping in there. There's the World Bank, there's oil companies, and actually European backers are scrambling. And part of this is just basically how to put together a post-conflict plan for Libya that's going to work. Everybody was hoping that the rebels were going to win. They just didn't think it was going to happen suddenly.
Right.
They thought it was going to be a slow burn. So France has called an urgent meeting of the so-called contact group for Libya next week in Paris. And Nicolas Sarkozy of France has invited Mahmoud Jibril, the prime minister of the rebel government, to attend. And they're saying, these diplomats are saying, the Libyan people need to be in charge. They have to do it. It's not for the international community, let alone NATO, to tell them what to do. And NATO has ruled out putting any of its troops on the ground in Libya as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough call right there. And I saw Michelle Bachmann, she chimed in today saying, you know, she supports all that, but we don't want to send any money or resources or do anything.
Yeah, let's not send any money or resources, but let's support them.
Yeah, well, here's a pat on the back. Good luck.
Yeah.
Nice. New report out, I guess, with the 10th anniversary of 9/11 coming up. They're bound to be more stories and more allegations popping up. What are the new reports detailing?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. It's the Congressional Research Service, which is probably the most reliable research service that there is out there. It's a 33-page overview of outstanding intelligence issues that Congress needs to focus on. And it basically says that 10 years after the 9/11 attacks, intelligence agencies are still struggling to strengthen the information sharing networks that broke down in 2001. And it says basically that there are several key barriers, and you've got the CIA, FBI, National Counterterrorism Center, Department of Homeland Security, National Security Agency, Director of National Intelligence, nearly a dozen others. I'm not going to start listing them. Then you've got branches of the military, And you've got a lot of different things, but one of the big problems is what they call the stove typing, which is really when either long-standing bureaucratic ineptitude or turf disputes stop agencies from allowing other agencies access to the intelligence reports.
Yeah. You know, when you're dealing with a whole bunch of alpha males, this is what you get.
And this apparently is what we got on 9/11, as one example, and more recently, the failed bombing of the Detroit-bound commercial airliner on Christmas Day in 2009.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see as we move closer to the day how much more of this kind of discussion is going to happen, but also much more of the fear-mongering so that there can be no military cuts whatsoever in the super committee's deliberations.
Well, that may happen too.
I'm expecting a whole bunch of fear-mongering and a new villain to appear, someone we need to focus all of our attention on so we don't talk about how much money we're spending.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if that didn't emerge.
So the 2012 presidential thing all kind of gearing itself up, new polls out?
Yes, a new Gallup poll. Mitt Romney would beat President Obama among registered voters today, and Rick Perry would tie the president today. But the president does lead Ron Paul and Michelle Bachmann, but by 2% and 4% respectively.
Well, so we're crazy, just not that crazy, is what you're telling me.
Right, not yet. We haven't gone that crazy yet. Yes.
And, I just saw something today that, said a good number of Obama's Wall Street money people are moving over to Romney. So there's kind of you can see it happening.
That's right, and a lot of those money people who are living in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, they have ties to the Democratic Party also.
Yep. Well, any gambler, they're going to hedge their bets. They're going to play both sides of the odds. You got to kiss up to each side, so just in case one wins, you got your in.
Exactly.
It doesn't take a genius when you got a whole bunch of money. You might as well just spread it around because you'll get it back.
Yes.
Michelle Bachmann back in the news again. And again, after the corn dog picture, I can't imagine her leaving the mainstream
consciousness. No, she won't. Well, as she said last week that under her presidency, the price of gasoline is going to go down to less than $2 a gallon. And she doubled down on that in an interview with the Washington Times radio affiliate. She said, yep, it is, and why wouldn't we be able to do that? We're a can-do America.
That's right.
And she doesn't seem to take into account the fact that these are globally set prices, but I think that was pointed out, and she just says what Barack Obama has done is lock up America's energy reserves.
Yeah. Well, history be damned and geopolitics be damned. Because if you remember, Bush kind of fell into that himself. When he was running against Gore, he said he'd just call up, the cartel over there and say, turn on the spigots.
And, right, because he knows them.
Yeah, I mean, he would just tell them, turn it on and it would flow like rivers of oil.
Yes, didn't happen.
So again, I think she stepped into that hole as well. But you know what? Here's the thing. If you keep repeating it long enough, people may buy into it, which is why I'm kind of saddened today that the FCC jumped in and basically, I guess, killed off what's left of the fairness doctrine.
Yeah, it was actually dead 2 decades ago. And what happened? Two things happened. One was occasionally a Democrat would say, oh, we should have it. And every time one rather lily-livered Democrat would say that because he just couldn't stand Sean Hannity, every right-winger on the radio would go insane and say, see, look, the liberals are trying to bring it back. So today, Jenikovsky said, it's dead.
It's dead. And see, I'm not a big fairness doctrine fan myself. But what I would like to see broken up is the ownership rules. I would like to see us undo the Clinton-era telecom bill that allowed us to see the big radio conglomerates owning hundreds of stations, multiple stations in markets. I would like to see that broken up so that you have more local ownership, more possibilities for different programming.
That would be an interesting idea. I remember those days.
Yeah, well, see, now you're showing your age.
Yeah, sadly.
And lastly, Maxine Waters telling the Tea Party to go to hell?
She did over the weekend. She was at a town hall meeting. And she said she was talking around about unemployment and the economy and saying that Democrats need to do more to advocate for job creation programs. And she said, this is a tough game. You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. And as far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
I agree. And for that, she caught the ire of Rick Santorum, who called her vile.
Vile?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what the rationale, and that she hates America. Because she wants to put people back to work. She wants to create jobs and you know, get the economy moving again. For that, she's vile.
Yes, well, you should try Googling Rick Santorum if you want to be vile.
And, yes, he is our frothy friend. Victoria Jones, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Going to take a break. Right back after this.
Money, all around. Chase the sky before it drags you down. Now, after the cry, see the sky. Hungry jungle hunters with one on planet eyes. Mother Nature's army retreats to hide and cry. So what's it all about?
We're smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
In 1897, miners at collieries throughout northeastern Pennsylvania's anthracite coal region had had enough. Conditions were grueling and life was difficult. Miners were frequently cheated out of pay, overcharged for supplies, some they never wanted or received, forced to live in captive company-owned towns, shop at overpriced company-owned stores, even mandated to use the company doctor since fees were deducted automatically from the miner's pay. This, combined with mine owners forcing longer unpaid hours and the anti-immigrant Campbell Act of 1897, taxing mine owners for the use of non-native labor, drove miners to strike. Spontaneously starting in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley, workers marched north to get other miners to join in the struggle. Their demands were modest, a 10-cent pay raise and a reduction in the cost of gunpowder. They also wanted the freedom to shop in non-company-owned stores of their choosing and see a doctor not owned by the coal company. As the miners moved northward toward Hazleton, mine owners, determined to crush the workers' protest, sent their company-paid police force and strike breakers. Local law enforcement was also on the side of mine owners. Luzerne County Sheriff James Martin, a former mine foreman, deputized 102 local men, arming them with Winchester rifles and sidearms. The group of some 400 miners marching peacefully and unarmed in rows of fours moved onward toward Latimer. Stephen Urich, joining the group outside of Hazleton, taking with him the American flag, shouted, "We have nothing to worry about because we have the American flag to protect us." Within hours and a hail of Winchester bullets, Stephen Urich was gunned down in cold blood, his beloved American flag drenched in his blood and the blood of those who lay murdered and wounded. Eyewitnesses said the sheriff and his hired killers mowed the men down like grass. More than 20 men were murdered on that September day, and more than 50 were wounded, many shot in the back in labor's forgotten massacre. The sheriff and his murderous band were tried for their part in the Latimer massacre and found not guilty of murdering 20 unarmed peaceful demonstrators. Lest we never forget, or as the wife of a miner whose life was stolen from him told her children, you can forgive, but you can't forget. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.ricksmithshow.com.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download it there at the website. Or if you've got one of these smartphones, you can download the Stitcher app and take your class war on the go. Big news out of Wisconsin. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is reporting that the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin are preparing a lawsuit alleging that the voter ID bill that the Wisconsin legislature rammed through and was signed by Walker violates the people's right to vote. And again, this is one of those, we've talked about the whole movement of the right to limit the amount of people out to the polls, and it takes me back. You know, I happen to be listening to some of my old FDR clips, and I came across this one that caught my attention.
They are, of course, perfectly willing to let you vote unless you happen to be a soldier or a sailor of the sea or a merchant seaman carrying the munitions of war. In that case, they've made it pretty hard for you to vote at all. For there are some political candidates who think that they may have a chance of election if only the total vote is small enough.
The thing is that philosophy has not changed since the days of FDR, and I would argue from the beginning of elections. There are people whose viewpoints are so radical and so extreme and so singularly focused to one specific ideology, and I would say to the wealth class, that they need to figure out how to suppress the vote, how to make sure that the average folks don't get out. And that's why there's so much media attention, so much messaging spent at bashing government, at making you hate your government, and then kind of divorcing you from we the people. I mean, they've really done a masterful job of that, if you think about it. They've done a masterful job of thinking that the government is some radical entity out there, completely separate of you, but that the corporation is good. Corporation's good for you, and it makes all the right decisions, and it acts in its own best self-interest, and it's going to do the right thing because it's afraid to be sued. But here's the problem. They act in their own best interests, correct? Their own short-term profitable interests. Because if they screw up, they just file bankruptcy. And then all of that stuff they screwed up is left to you and me. So when they heavily pollute, don't worry. Put that off on the taxpayer. When they make a bad bet, never mind. Write that off on the taxpayer. And I look at this, again, in Michigan, same thing. You're seeing a group of folks, attorneys from Demos and Project Vote, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under the Law, the NAACP, they're now sending a letter of notification to the Michigan Secretary of State saying, you know what? You need to bring the state into compliance with the National Voter Registration Act. You're not doing it. Again, another state taken over by radical Republicans saying we want to hold on to power, and we're going to do everything we can do to make sure that we keep that vote down, to make sure that people don't have the access to the ballot. And, sometimes you got to wonder, what is it about us that we don't seem to get it? The more I look at it, the more it's pretty simple stuff. And, I go back to the old Paul Weyrich quote, which,
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And again, that mentality has always been with us. The minority, the radical groups. Understand, Paul Weyrich was the founder of the Heritage Foundation, one of the people who pushed this radical right-wing agenda. From the beginning, they get it. If we can tick off those working people, if we can disenfranchise those minorities, if we can make it more difficult for those old people to get to the polls, they're just going to give up. And I look at 2004, and the caller earlier was right. They did rip off the election in Ohio. Because you're not going to tell me that people stood in line for 10 hours in my home county of Cuyahoga County, which is Cleveland, for 10 hours to vote for the status quo. Sorry, not happening. People don't stand in 10 hours for things they absolutely want half the time. So when I saw reports, people standing out there, and the vote was so close in Cuyahoga County, sorry, not buying it. That's why I'm hoping these lawsuits go forward. But again, you look at our Supreme Court, 5-4. And people beat up on Obama, and there's an awful lot of beating up on him. And look, I'm one of the people out there on the front lines. I'll be the first to tell you, a lot of the stuff he's done is really screwing up. But come next November, judging on who the Republicans have out to this point, I will be voting against whoever the Republicans put out for one reason, and that's Anthony Kennedy. Or Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She's no spring chicken either. Either one of those go in the next term. We've got a permanent 5-4 majority of very right-wing Republicans. And this nation takes a very, very scary turn. And I say we go back to the days of Lochner. We go back to the days where corporations had ultimate power. They do now. But even more, to where any attempt to rein them in will be shot down. Because at some point, we're going to need another Teddy Roosevelt. At some point, we need somebody who's going to step forward and say, we got to break up some of these big multinationals. We got to break up some of these big corporations who are monopolizing our markets. We should have broken up the banks. That's what we should have done. And you look at all the money that we've handed over to the banking industry in hopes that maybe they'll not destroy the economy as quick. Hasn't helped. And you look at that $1.2 trillion we basically gave them. Here, take it. Go do something with it. They didn't save 6.5 million people's homes. The last reports I've seen, they're pathetic. You know, 400,000 or 500,000 modifications. You go, really? That's the best we can do? And it's the best they were willing to do. Anyway, the story out of Carlisle. This is definitely not how to win friends and influence people, or maybe it is. This 49-year-old guy, he was charged Friday because police said he used a knife to threaten a couple who didn't want to smoke and drink with him. Didn't want to smoke any pot, didn't want to drink the beer, so this guy, Mark Kramer, I guess his name is, took out a knife, said that he would cut the heart out of the other guy and feed it to his cat. So I'm going, really, this is not the kind of guy I want to party with. Kind of insane. Maybe he was sniffing too many bath salts, which evidently are now banned in the state of Pennsylvania. No more synthetic pot. None of that. Because we've heard the horror stories, right? Yeah, there's these bath salts out there. There's this synthetic marijuana that's being circulated. And there's part of me that says, you know, I really don't care. You know, it's like the kid who, when I was younger, was sniffing the Freon and didn't stop, didn't reproduce. There's part of me, and look, there's a very survival of the fittest mentality that I have sometimes. The kid who looks down the barrel of the gun and pulls the trigger doesn't reproduce. Probably not a bad thing. But this, you know, the reports are out now that, you know what? They're working on products to replace them. And are you surprised by that? So we ban the bath salts, we ban the synthetic pot, we ban all the stuff, and you know what? They come up with some other things. And I like the Chris Rock routine. He talks about, you know, you could ban all the booze, all the cocaine, everything. You could ban it all. And people would go down in their basement with gasoline and lima beans trying to figure out how to get high. People who are going to do it are going to figure out a way. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, they started inhaling those whippets, and I thought it was just the dumbest thing in the world. Didn't do it. Other kids did, and, you know, God bless them, they went on their way. Then it was the airplane glue, and the kid who didn't get the bag off his head in time, well, he didn't reproduce either. Then when I got to high school, it was Rush deodorant stuff that they use for locker rooms that people love to sniff up their nose. God bless them. If they're that miserable, got to do what you got to do. You could ban all that stuff. They're going to find something else. So we spent a whole lot of time figuring out how to ban this stuff, and now they're coming up with something to fix that. So good for us. We'll soon have a new replacement for the bath salts and the synthetic pot. Maybe the guy with the knife will threaten to cut out somebody's heart over that. Here's a good one. This right-wing Christian activist, her name is Linda Harvey. Evidently, she has a radio program, and her claim is, and, you know, again, you know, another one of these right-wing haters who seems to be, you know, just completely obsessed with homosexuals. And I've always said, you know, and I truly believe this, I think you just let homosexuals marry. I don't care. If you're that outraged by the act of two homosexuals having sex, marriage is the best thing to stop that. But according to her, she says the first thing that they should do to, if you want to make a serious dent in the HIV and syphilis disease track, she says, you know, one obvious approach is to stop promoting sexual behavior to our kids and falsely calling it identity, like race, and we could close down all the homosexual bars and bathhouses. She said that would be a good start. And, you know, I started thinking about that. I'm going, well, you know, that's kind of really a bizarre thought process she's got going on there. And, you know, I started just really going through this whole thought process of, like, the Verizon strike, for instance. You know, we had some really bad weather. You know, so, you know, I guess you could make the argument that, you know, God wanted the Verizon strike to come to end, so he sent the bad weather. And if I use her logic, I could even take that a step further. If I wanted to stop pedophilia, we could just close all the Catholic churches. Done. Simple stuff. Here's another great story. Under the guns don't kill people, people kill people category, but guns help, of course. There was a 61-year-old Harrisburg woman who was shot and killed while trying to buy a gun at a gun shop in Huntington Township yesterday. Evidently, the man was holding the gun, and it just went off. No idea why. He was holding the gun, pointed at her, and shot her in the stomach. She, unfortunately, did not make it. So here you go. But, you know, she was a Harrisburg woman who, you know, you got to start questioning that. Do we really want people handling guns like that? And, you know, the first thing we thought of is, did it misfire? And, you know, which lawsuit are we going to see there? Another interesting report out of China from Beijing. Chinese experts said a top court's decision on the fate of a house after divorce is aimed at discouraging young women from worshiping money. Evidently, you know, China's got a growing wealth class. They've got some billionaires who, you know, they don't want to have to go through all the legal mumbo-jumbo of prenuptials. So they've just bought off the court, I guess, to say that when there's a divorce, whoever owns the house before the marriage gets the house. They said, you know, they wanted to educate young people, especially young women, to be more independent rather than to think that marriage is in the right way rather than worshiping money, which I find interesting. His decision, Mr. Wang, said that there are more and more girls who want to marry rich men and improve their financial position. It has been really notable. It's been this great increase. Most pretty girls now try to trade their beauty. It is unhealthy, and the government is trying to restrict it. So no more gold diggers in China, I guess. The wealth will continue upward. Anyway, great show tonight. I want to thank all of our guests, and, of course, Brett, our chief knob turner and phone answerer and chief cook and bottle washer. Thanks to him for keeping everything on the air. Thank you for being here. Of course, if you missed any portion of the program, you can go to thericksmithshow.com and download our podcast. Or if you've got a smartphone, just get the Stitcher app and take it with you. Again, I hope you had a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow. So much more going on as we continue down the road to taking back this country and building an economy that works for all of us. Have a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Thing from Randall. Watch the clock, Bob. Yep, it's time. Yep, time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, all of you who make the program go and make it all work and keep the lights on. Thank you. Someday, we'll be keeping the lights on with the power of the sun and not some blown-up mountain. It will happen. In the meantime, I'll look for you again. Well, listen for you, I guess, tomorrow night. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, and thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, Reverbo.